And welcome back to MTG Eternities. I'm your host, Carl. Today with me, I have a couple of really good friends of mine. I'm going to let them introduce themselves here in a minute. But as you know, we're going to be going over our thoughts on the Commander 17 spoilers, what we think about each deck, and we'll go ahead and give you our thoughts on them. So I'm going to go ahead and pass the mic off first to my friend, Bill.
Hello, my name is Bill. I've been playing consistently since Zendikar, the original Zendikar. And I currently own about 8 Commander decks, but I specialize in Modern, Legacy, and Commander.
And my name is Michael Murphy. Some of you might know me as Arrogant Axolotl on the MTG Salvation forums. I'm a Commander enthusiast and Mad Scientist, and I'm pretty excited about this year's set. Can't wait to talk about it.
Glad to have these two guys with me. With their expertise on EDH decks, it's going to be a great show. I've mentioned it before, but I'll go ahead and give my stuff. I've built several EDH decks over the years, like Shroom. Currently working off of Spider EDH. I'm trying to make that work. It's been real fun. So with that in mind, we're going to go ahead and start off first discussing our thoughts on the Cat EDH deck. So the first card we want to discuss is Arabo, Roar of the Wild, a 5/5 legendary cat with eminence. At the beginning of your combat, you can target another cat, it's going to get +3/+3 for the turn. Or whenever another cat you control attacks, you may pay 1 green, 1 plains, 1 colorless. If you do, it gains +X/+X, where X is its power, and it gains trample. So overall, in my opinion, not a bad starting commander. I do feel, personally, that his eminence is a little underpowered when you look at some of the other eminence commanders. But that's just initially my first thought on Arabo, Roar of the Wild. Roar of the World, yes. I don't know why I keep going Roar of the Wild. I think that's like a movie or something that came out.
I'm surprised you think this eminence ability is a little underwhelming, because here's how I see this card. I understand that you have to have the card in play at this point, but this makes any cat terrifying.
Actually, with eminence, they don't have to be in play. They could be in the command zone to do it.
I meant the second ability. Yeah, I'm leading into that. So let's say you have this guy out, and you have something as simple as a 2/2 cat in play, okay? Now, during your combat step, you know, it's going to make that cat a 5/5. And you can pay as little as 3 mana to make that a 10/10. So if you just turned a 2/2 on board into 10 damage, like just straight up. If this card is ever in play, every cat that you ever play is just going to be nuts. Right?
You're right. It is going to be rather nuts. I just feel like the other commanders in comparison at least seem a little bit better. Except maybe one we'll get to later, which I think is maybe the worst eminence ability. I just feel like 5/5 for 5 that he doesn't target himself. He's just, and he makes the other cats great, which is fine, but he doesn't target himself.
Also, I would like to mention why I also agree that this card is kind of insane, is because its ability can stack on each other. So if you say you have a 5/5 cat, which you're going to combat with, if you have 6 mana available, you can target the same cat twice. The first ability resolves, it becomes a 10/10. Then the second ability resolves, it becomes a 20/20.
That is not how that ability works at all.
Oh, whenever it attacks?
Whenever another cat attacks. So it checks the cats that are attacking, and then you get a triggered ability on the stack that says you may pay 3. And if you do, you get to double that particular cat's stat.
But you can't target the same cat twice?
It doesn't even target at all. I mean, there's no targeting in that ability.
Which means it gets round shroud. Done. if you could only target it once, it might be one of those commanders that's a bit off in comparison. It's still an insane card, especially considering that it looks like the cat's going to be a Voltron-style deck. So if you can get Miri or one of the other cats in there to lethal damage, it's going to be fairly epic, I think.
And Miri's an especially good one at that, right? Yeah. Because she allows you to only get pretty much just one creature through combat the whole time, right?
Mm-hmm.
First strike, whenever it attacks, each opponent can't block with more than a single creature. So if you attack with Miri herself, presuming she's buffed by Arabo or something, then she's enormous, and you can only block her with one guy. And then once she's tapped, presuming because you attacked with her, then you can only be attacked by one creature also, which makes it difficult to attack you back on the backswing, right?
Yeah.
Does she have to attack alone to get this ability? No. That's interesting.
You can alpha strike with her, and then your opponents can still only block with one thing. So unless they have the 100-handed one or something that can just block infinite things, they're still only going to have one blocker.
Right.
which is just insane. So I think the max you can get her up to just with Arabo alone is probably, what, a 12-12? Because Arabo's ability triggers you target her with a +3/+3 for combat.
Right.
And then you pay Arabo's ability, and now she's a, what, a 12-11 first strike trample?
Right, and Arabo gives... The trample means no one's just going to want to block her at all, yeah. Right? But if she's your commander, then what do? Throw guys under the bus? She's got first strike. She's not dying, even if you have a death touch in play. So.
Yeah, another thing to mention is that Miri, whenever she attacks, each opponent can block with no more than one creature. But it doesn't necessarily say whenever she attacks alone. So if you attack with team, they can only block with one creature, is what I'm reading.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I think there's only a handful of creatures that can block multiple things in Magic. I know 100-handed one blocks 100 things. I think there's a spider that blocks 8 things. I can't recall its name right now. And there's, I think, an angel that can possibly block infinite things, depending on what you want to do with that.
I'm having a hard time even thinking of any that are played all that often in Commander. Yeah. Although this could just be my memory.
No, I don't think they're played at all in Commander.
For the most part.
Spider, but...
Okay, sure, you would say that.
Hey, that spider has saved my butt a lot of times. I'm really upset. I can't think of the name right now. I think combined, Miri and Arabo are great. I think they make excellent standalone commanders as well.
Right.
I think that also does segue into the last commander of this deck, which is Azan, Revered Bladesmith. 6/5/4. When he enters play, you basically get to search your deck for... any artifact, put it into your hand, unless you want to search for the Hammer of Nazan, which I believe goes into play when he searches for it. Yeah, the Hammer of Nazan immediately goes into play, so that's something really nice, actually, with Nazan, just to be able to search up your own equipment, put it into play. Whenever equipped creature you control attacks, you may tap target defending creature player controls. That ability to me seems kind of lackluster. It's just kind of something thrown on there. But you can abuse that ability if all your field's equipped with one equipment. It doesn't say one creature equipped. So if everything on your field's equipped, you can maybe get to tap down 8-9 things simultaneously.
Right.
Which isn't terrible. We've had tutor effects like this before. I would compare them to Stoneforge Mystic, Stonehewer Giant. Those cards are really great in Commander. Sure. And you might even run them in the same deck with Nazan Bladesmith.
Almost certainly, right? I do want to clarify that Nazan itself, you cannot find any artifact. It's only equipments with this. But with that said... I still really, really like this card a lot. Mostly because this card has like 4 different abilities. It's really modular in an extremely subtle way. So when you play this, it's very obvious that you can just pull out the equipment. And the equipment itself, let me pull it up real quick, if I remember correctly, gives +2/+0 and indestructible?
Yes.
Okay. So, and then it allows you to attach any equipments that come into play just for free, right?
Yep.
Whenever it or another equipment enters the... Right. Okay, so the first time you play Nazan, he can come down as, what, a 7-4 indestructible? So that's something. But let's say that you sacrifice Nazan or he leaves the battlefield for whatever reason and you still got the hammer in play. From there, if you, like, recast Nazan, like, you can tutor up whatever equipment you want. You can hell. I mean, the first time you do this, you can even find a equipment that blinks it yourself, or like, you know, causes it to leave the battlefield, but still leaves you the equipment in play, just to get another equipment out of Nazan, and then start attaching these equipments for free once you cast them with him. So he's really good at getting all sorts of valuable equipments out of your deck and into your hand and or play, on top of being potentially an indestructible creature himself. The last ability, making it so that you can use equipments to tap down creatures, is really useful in the sense that it means you don't have to pack your deck full of creatures. You can devote a lot of your attention to just playing lots of sweet equipment cards, and then the creatures you do play can either be the utility ones that involve, you know, fetching equipments or whatnot, or just like token generators like White Sun Zenith, I'm assuming is in the deck. I haven't looked at it entirely or remember.
It is.
Yeah, I figured it would be. So you just, you know, create a bunch of tokens that way with a single card, and then you have the equipment cards, you know, to attach and force your team through with that creature. So
I'm probably gonna split ways on this one. Out of the cat deck generals, I probably dislike this one the least. I think it's a very Voltron build, and this general's mana restriction is kind of apparent, being a 6 mana spell. 7/4, but they can just destroy the equipment because it doesn't make the equipment itself indestructible. I just feel like it's weak to a lot of disruption.
Dice to do blade?
Yeah.
Not while the hammer's on it.
Well, you can respond to the trigger.
Yeah, sure, you could.
So, I mean, there
although
is
they
that.
Might like that. I guess eight mana for another equipment is kind of a lot to ask for. But, yeah.
I just think that, and it's also kind of segueing, and this is maybe a minor like criticism, but say if you had the hammer in hand, that you wouldn't be able to use this ability to tutor the hammer and put it into play. So
does it work that way?
Yeah, you search for it, reveal it, and then if it's the hammer, you put it in the back.
That is interesting. You're right. It does not allow you to pull one from your hand. You must search your library for an equipment. So if the hammer is already in your hand, then that's a problem.
Or say if it's another equipment that you needed to play.
I think they kind of gave us a solution to that, going back to, not back to Innistrad, but we just effectively came from it. There is a card with Sigarda's Aid. One drop effectively allows all your equipment to have flash. I think that card's going to be an obvious include for this deck if you want to build a Zahn by himself. I think that there are three different style commanders that we're obviously looking here at. With a Zahn, you're building an equipment Voltron. I think with Miri, you're probably building an enchantment-based Voltron style. Maybe not even enchantment. Maybe it's just like a lockdown taxing deck with Miri. It seems like there's two ways you can go with that.
You think so?
Okay. I think so.
See, I'd be more inclined to say that Miri is the best Voltron commander out of this lot. Because of the way she messes with combat.
I'm not even saying Azan's like the best Voltron commander. I'm just saying that he's a different style Voltron commander.
Yeah.
With Miri, you can put equipments on her, but I think the better of the two equipments is more than likely Azan, just for the sheer fact he can make stuff come in and attach automatically.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. If I was going to play a green-white deck that I wanted to be focused around equipments, which most of those I think are now are just mono-white, I think this opens up a new path to do that. Because I can't recall there being a really sweet green-white commander that I would say, oh, I'm going to build this guy around equipments. And Nazan, I think, does that now.
Yeah.
So that space is now open. Similarly, before, man, I forget that cat's name. The one with Imminence?
Arabo.
Similarly, I think Arabo opens up design space for cat commander decks that didn't exist before. I guess you could have played like Raksha Golden Cup or whatever. Like, she buffed cats, right? Or is it only equipped ones?
I think only equipped ones.
Is it? Well, either way. You know, this now gives you two different colors to play with and is just amazing on top of it.
So. Yeah.
To me, why I think Marie's kind of interesting is because you could go a route of separating yourself from, say, an equipment Voltron deck and go with an Enchantress Voltron deck. Because it is in the correct colors and its abilities can interact really well with that. Especially things that can... give it first strike, trample, big buffs.
Well, it already has first strike.
Yeah.
Gotcha. With the Auras?
Touche. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like to me, I think it's very cut and dry. The cards work well together. And I'm going to just say it now. My opinion looking at this, more than likely to me, is Azan is probably the weakest out of the three. Not the most popular opinion. But that's only for the sheer mana cost. I think the strongest out of the three, also probably not the popular opinion, but is Miri. I really enjoy her just as a lockdown style deck, as a taxing deck, and the fact that she can get in there. You can, even if you wanted to, she is another Infect commander if you wanted to. You could put green and white Infect cards in there. Granted, white doesn't have a lot of Infect, but you could run it in that style to make it so your opponent can only block one thing, pump up whatever they don't block, kill them with Infect.
Does green have all that many?
Green?
Like grant infect?
Green has a few cards that have infect.
I mean, the exoskeleton comes to mind, right? The
exoskeleton, plus they have Glistener Elf, plus they have Putrefax, plus they have a bunch of other green
tramplers. Oh, I get you. Not trying to grant her infect, but just running other infect creatures and just using her as like dueling grounds to make combat. Yeah.
And there's another artifact that also grants a creature infect. Gets +2/+2 in infect.
The exoskeleton?
Yeah.
Right.
There's a bunch of stuff you could do with her. I think Miri's the best. I think... Unpopular opinion, of course. I think Arabo is great for a cat commander, but the sheer fact of the matter is he doesn't do anything for himself. He does stuff for other cats.
Yeah, that is... I don't know. So I think that's both interesting and also kind of lame, right? Because on his own, he's literally just a 5/5. He's just a body. But you're obviously not going to play him in any deck other than a cat deck anyways. So presumably, you're just going to stuff it full of cats and you're just going to be able to use the ability to its fullest effect regardless.
Yeah.
I was thinking more in lines of, a low-curve, aggressive cat deck. Say there's, I think, one that came out recently. It's a common. It's a 3-1 cat warrior that's all its ability, but it's 2 mana. So on turn two, or I mean, if you can give it haste, or turn three, whenever it swings, it's now a six four. So that's a lot of pressure early on against an opponent, especially in a one-on-one match setting.
1v1, I think the cat deck's going to come out swinging, but very few people play 1v1 most days. I think when you're looking at it, most commander games are played in pods of four right now, and pods of four, the cat's going to, I think, kind of struggle.
You think so?
In pods of four.
We'll see. I haven't played with any of the decks myself yet, but I'd be surprised if the cat deck wasn't the one killing players the most often off of all the decks that I've seen, just because its ability to attack profitably in combat seems so much better than the rest of the decks.
I would agree. I think the cat deck's very strong. It's just a matter of survival to me. I have something set in mind, and we'll get to it when we start talking about it, but I think there's another deck that's going to stand out as the best. What do you guys think? What's the worst cat commander, so on and so forth? Worst and best.
So you I think, a pretty conservative idea of what was best and what was worst. You simply went with the one that cost the least as best, and the most expensive one was the worst, which is a pretty safe stance to take, I think. In terms of sheer power, I think Arabo is the best out of them. You get more for your buck with him than any of the other ones. With that said, it does not really have... It can't be played outside of a dedicated cat deck, right? There's nowhere else you're going to use that card. So you're not going to see a lot of it.
You can play it in a Changeling deck.
Okay. You could. I guess if you had the Reaper King, like Tribal Lords deck, where all you do is just play Lords, and you have that guy in it, he could be, right? He could be amazing. But aside from that, right, I think he's the most powerful among them. Least powerful, I'm going to have to agree, I think it's Nizan. For the same reason, I think he just costs a lot of mana, and what you get is valuable when you cast him. I don't think he's a bad card at all. Simply just that you aren't... He's not as effective as, like, Miri is for his cost.
Yeah.
I would completely agree. I think Arabo, Roar of the Worlds, is going to be the best general deck just because its abilities are very aggressive, and they can make other things. Like, not by itself, but even the eminence ability, like being able to interact with the board, just even in the command zone, I think is a strong effect. Miri is a very aggressive. I'd say she's more geared towards like a one-on-one, but she can also get there in multiplayer as well. But yeah, Nizan just, I feel, doesn't impact the board strongly enough whenever he enters the battlefield. I feel like his second ability, his last ability, is a little bit tacked on and maybe irrelevant in a lot of cases. It'd only be a very select specific circumstances that it will be relevant.
I mean, with Miri, her ability does affect the whole field, whereas the other two, I think, affect very... With Nizan, it's just going to affect one person per se. You're not going to have enough equipment to affect everyone on the field, and if you do, it's some miracle, I think.
Right.
And Arabo obviously only affects your side of the field. I would have liked for him to have built-in trample as well. I think I would have liked him a little bit more.
Who?
Arabo.
Arabo?
Yeah, if he had trample, I think... I mean, he's a lion. Come on, you couldn't give him trample or something?
I almost feel like you're just never maybe vigilance with that card.
Yeah, because the card's not designed to be the aggressive. The card is designed to sit back and make other creatures become the aggressive.
Or never get cast.
Yeah. Or never get cast. I mean, he is one of those chair commanders. And I mean, to be fair, that's what most of the cycle is. It's more chair commanders. Do we really need more chair commanders, though?
Okay, so if you want to talk about imminence, my feelings... This is a pretty unpopular stance. I know a lot of people really like that the way Commander plays right now. Personally, I've always felt that Commander would be a lot more interesting if it played like Vanguard, where you had the Magic format, where you have commanders that have sort of innate abilities that do things that change the way that you build decks beyond just, like, you know, the colors that you're playing, right? And imminence does that. When you play Arabo as your commander, like, it gives you a very specific direction to take your deck with, and it's going to play differently and feel differently than any other kind of commander deck. And you don't have to spend mana for that to happen just at all, right? A lot of these commanders, they can have interesting directions to build their decks, but you can't actually get their abilities online, like Zahn per se, until you actually hit 6 mana, right? And at that point in the game, like, half the game, I feel like, is almost over at that point, right? Depending on how quickly you hit six. So it would have been really nice if more of these cards existed, in my eyes. So I'm happy to have as many armchair commanders as possible. The one thing that I think that people just don't like about them is that because you do have to cast other commanders, it makes them seemingly more powerful, right? Because you're getting an ability for free.
Point taken. So quickly before I forget, with Eminence, I do feel like some of the abilities are there, and it's great to have more armchair commanders. So I agree to some extent. I'm just thinking of Aloro, the biggest armchair commander ever, literally sitting in a chair initially. With him, his ability compared to Eminence, what do you think?
Well, I mean, Aloro is pretty effortless, right? Like, because every deck can use life, you don't have to build around Aloro in any way whatsoever. So when you play Aloro, you're just like, hey, I'm an Esper Colors. Yeah, I would just like free life, please. And then you play that guy, right? He doesn't cause you to necessarily build your deck in an interesting direction. You can. You can choose to build Aloro around life gain, but you don't have to. Whereas, you know, with the Eminence abilities, because they only work with their, you know, dedicated tribes, you pretty much have to use that tribe if you want any hope of, you know, capitalizing off that ability whatsoever. So, you know, for example, you look at Edgar, right? Whenever you cast a vampire, you make a 1-1. Awesome ability. Getting free 1-1s, you know, that can change the way you build a deck completely. Yeah. However, if you're not playing a bunch of vampires, it's just not going to happen, right? So you can't stick him in a commander slot like you could Aloro.
Understandable. Bill, do you feel the same way, or...?
Yeah, I think that the Eminence ability does offer like an interesting like early interaction that you really don't get with a lot of commanders, and I think that this does in fact promote like builds that are outside the norm or might be more of a dedicated, because this is supposed to be a tribal format and these promote tribal decks instead of the other ones that are commanders that are tribal, but they don't necessarily promote a tribal build because they don't have to have it.
Understandable. So I guess before we get too far off into our topic of Eminence here, why don't we discuss another Eminence commander? I think we left Eminence as an ability off on a good spot for right now. I guess let's go into dragons. Do you want to start us off?
I could. So I play a 4-5-color deck in Commander right now, and one of the things that this year's release really disappointed me with was the Dragon Command. And I think that's mostly because when you look at Magic's history, and you see all of the 5-color commanders that are available right now currently, you will notice that the vast, and I mean vast majority of them, they're all tribal-related, right? I mean, you've got things like Scion of the Ur-Dragon, getting reprint, affects dragons. You have things like, man, I'm blanking on this guy's name. Guy that works with a bunch of elementals.
Horde of Notions?
There you go.
Or Horde of Nations, something like that.
Horde of Notions, yeah. You've got Horde of Notions for elementals. You've got, you know, all the Sliver variants, Sliver Queen, Sliver Overlord, yada yada. And you have very little 5-color legends that actually do interesting things that just don't revolve around tribes. So, they print Ur-Dragon for dragons. Sure, that's fine. You know, that guy's sweet. But when it came to the other two that didn't, you know, revolve around a tribe in and of themselves, I think Wizards bricked pretty hard here.
I would agree for the sheer fact that one of them's not even a 5-color commander, it's a 3-color commander. And it also actually ties into the last tribe we were talking about. It's a cat dragon, so technically it's another viable cat commander as well. What is it? Watoshi or something like that? The
Nokoru Queen.
The Nokoru Queen. They I love these names, but sometimes they're just impossible to get the right pronunciation until like the Monosource comes up with it after they call Wizards for the right pronunciation.
Wasatora.
Yeah, Wasatora.
I'm inclined to believe that every syllable is pronounced because of the Niko in the Queen, leading it to a Japanese pronunciation where every syllable is, you know, enunciated, like Greek.
Maybe it's just me, but I find it's somewhat of a flavor fail that this is a cat dragon that doesn't share colors with other cats in the
I thought the same too, right? So, like, it's not white, so, I mean, you can't play with the other cat cards.
Most importantly, you can't play with the cat lord that just came out with in Amonkhet right now. You can't play with the Nakato lord. Right. So she can't even be pumped up.
The fact that it's a cat is mostly irrelevant, right? Like, okay, so there's a couple green cats you can play this with that are in the pre-con. like the Aura Shards cat, or shoot, what's the other one? The Mouser.
Yeah, the Mouser.
Yeah,
the rat cat.
The Lynx.
So there are a couple that work with it, right? But for the most part, there really isn't a heck of a lot of synergy there. But that's not actually one of the three. Excuse me, poster child. What's the word I'm looking for?
It's not one of the three viable commanders. The other one's the engine, right? The dragon engine.
You got Ramos and you got Okagachi.
Yeah.
And man, I was so disappointed with those. So like, Okagachi is something I really, really wanted to like. And at its core, like, ideally you play a commander because it has some ability that interests you, right? A direction to build around or something that inspires you. And this is like, hey, I have a really big guy, but if you attack me while this big guy's in play because somehow I'm not blocking with my big guy, and you attack through profitably, I can destroy a permanent you control, but only if I attack you and only if I deal damage to you. So what does this do? what direction do you take with this card, right?
It's not just that, but the player also has to have attacked you the previous turn. So against decks that don't run such a kind of linear approach on killing your opponents, say just attacking with creatures, that this ability becomes irrelevant.
Right. Yeah. If they're not even hitting you, then who cares, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
So I feel like there maybe is potential to actually build this guy with sort of Goblin Diplomats types cards, Alluring Siren, where you like force your opponent to attack you, sort of thing. Fumiko the Low Blood. So like force creatures to get in combat, and then once they do so, then you can vindicate one of their cards, right? But that aside, man, do you really want to play this guy at the helm of that kind of deck?
It's a hard thing to do, honestly. I think with Okagachi, I agree. I was severely disappointed considering he was he the big bad guy on Kamigawa block, or was he just like the god that just like pissed off everyone?
I am no expert when it comes to Kamigawa lore at all, or just any magic lore, but I know that a lot of folks were really disappointed with this card's representation.
The fact that it does have trample, I do like. It's not terrible, which means you can, in theory, get through with commander damage, but hear me out on this. I don't think he needs to be sitting at the helm of a dragon seat. I actually think he needs to be sitting somewhere else.
Well,
I think he needs to be sitting at the helm of a tribal spirit deck.
A lot of people would have liked that, right? Mm-hmm. But see, I don't even like that this guy has trample, or the fact that he's a 6-6, really, because the fact that he's so big almost undermines his ability, right? Like, if you can just crash in for a ton of damage with your huge flyer, right? What do you need to vindicate something for? You just killed them. This guy already has 6 power, right? You know, and I get in commander where you have 40 life, it's going to take more than just that. But, I mean, if he hits hard, then the fact that you're destroying, you know, their permanence is kind of moot, right? You're just killing.
Yeah, with this guy, I find, like, it's a... Like, if I look at, like, disregard the second ability, which is substantial, it's a 6-mana 6-6 flying trample, which, to me, like, in that point of the game, is not offering, especially if he doesn't immediately offer anything that's beneficial to the board, seems very weak to me.
Yeah, he's just a guy.
Yeah, at that point, he's just a 6-6.
He could potentially act as a rattlesnake and make it so that you don't take damage potentially, because you're like, oh well, you know, I had this guy who could slip under you and deal 2 damage to you, but I'm not going to attack you now because then you could vindicate one of my things, right? So like, if you have players that want to pot shot you, but again, if you just cast this guy that turn presumably, then you've got a 6-6 untapped to block, right? What are they hitting you with, right? Is it bigger than a 6-6?
It's Blightsteel Colossus, there you
right
go. It's a Blightsteel Colossus, and which can't even be vindicated. Which can't
is it exile or destroy?
Exile.
Okay, never exile. Mind okay, so it's slightly better. It's slightly better with an exile.
Still, yeah. Very unhappy with this guy.
I do feel like a combo player might not want to swing into this guy, because he could, in theory, eradicate a combo piece. It could eradicate, like, say, Academy Ruins or something. But that's just me. Even then, a combo player is generally not going to be doing a lot of swinging.
Yeah, exactly. The combo player, unless they're trying to win through combat, like in which case it's probably all in one turn, isn't probably going to be attacking with creatures in the first place. So this guy's just lame.
and you know what the worst part about this is? Worst part with Orogachi is he doesn't get around life loss. Life loss is not damage, which makes me incredibly happy, because guess what? I'm winning with life loss with Ishkana.
Yeah,
I don't care.
So even there is just...
It loses to spiders, folks. That's how bad this guy is. And my spiders deck is not that horrible.
My apologies if you like this card. This is just... Yeah.
I wasn't impressed.
You want to talk about Ramos?
Yeah.
Talk about Ramos.
Sure.
I really enjoy Ramos. As an artifact commander, we could always use another one. He gives access to all the colors. So in theory, you could build an artifact deck now that isn't just exclusively artifacts or isn't exclusively like red and artifacts or stuff like that. And plus, he wins with Door to Nothingness.
Sure. That's
an obvious combo.
I'm
not going to lie. I do think he's hindered by the fact that you can only use his ability once per turn. But let's be real here. If that wasn't the hindrance, this guy could probably go infinite every time.
Yeah, pretty much. You'd find something to spend the mana on that just put counters on him as an activated ability and then just a two-card combo, right?
Yep.
One-card combo as a commander, effectively. Mm-hmm. So
I think the card's great. It's hard for me to find fault with this, to be honest.
You know, so I said that I was disappointed pretty much with the five-color Legends this year. And Ramos, I guess it just wasn't for me. The thing that I like most about Ramos, I think, is that it sort of encourages a couple new archetypes. You said five-color artifact-based decks. That wasn't a deck I even thought about, to be honest, because I figured, you know, with Brea just being printed, like, what does adding green really offer up to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I think this card does that I'm not sure any other commander does really all that well is be a five-color Legend that encourages you to play mono gold in the sense that you just want to play all the cards that have the most difficult casting costs possible. So you play things like Yidris Maelstrom Wanderer, you play things like now I'm bricking. You could play Traps in this, I suppose. Proliferate some of the counters that you put on this guy. But because their casting cost is so difficult, you just innately get a whole bunch of +1/+1 counters on this creature. You don't even have to use them as a +1/+1 counter oriented commander, right? You can just play him as just playing charms, right?
Yeah.
Every one gives you like 60% of 10 mana, so 6 mana effectively. You know, you're generating mana by casting those cards. Yeah. So
whenever I see this card, I think of more like how it would be an interesting like build to build it around Storm, like in storming abilities, because you can just keep up the chain going. But I feel like other commanders do it better than he does. Even when, like, I think probably the biggest thing for this guy is in a deck that's dedicated to five colors, you know, he doesn't have to suffer from the, proverbial, like, I can't cast it because I don't have access to green or black or whatever. Like, he could...
You're right. That is really useful as a commander, right? Because sometimes when you play five color, it's not easy to get all of your colors, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that he's colorless means that you don't have to worry about that.
I did just reread him. I want to kind of just state this. You can use his ability anytime. It doesn't even say sorcery speed on him. So if you manage to get enough counters on him on your opponent's turn, you can generate that mana during your opponent's turn and do something with it. I don't know what you can do, but you can effectively, let's say we do have Door to Nothingness on the field and you just want to win immediately. You can generate that much mana on your opponent's turn, use Door, kill them, win game on their turn.
Sure.
It is an option.
If the door's untapped.
If the door's untapped. Amulet of Vigor.
Yeah, I'm just not a big fan of the the door strategy. The reason being is that it has to sacrifice itself and it only kills one opponent. So in a pot of four, you wasted a lot of resources just to take one person out. And maybe that's a viable reason, but I feel like you want to be spending it to kill everybody.
Hasn't stopped people from playing. What is it? Aetherflux Reservoir?
Aetherflux Reservoir.
But that can combo, because I've seen it with
Sidri
deck,
yeah.
Where they give it Death Touch
it
and Lifelink,
right.
And then they can then turn it into creatures, so they just gain the life back to just Gatling Gun and the whole
table.
Effective or not, I think people are going to want to play this with Door, which leads me to already dislike this card a little bit, because I don't think anyone ever wants to be on the other side of Door to Nothingness.
I mean, I'm already thinking you do Door to Nothingness. You put a Rift Sweeper in there just for shits and gigs, and then once the Rift Sweeper dies, you also put an Eternal Witness so you can get the Rift Sweeper back.
Oh, does the Door exile itself?
Door exiles
okay,
itself.
Okay.
Or if you sacrifice it, if it doesn't exile itself, you can use Eternal Witness, get it back, and keep going, and try to just keep running off there. I think there's...
Right. I was just thinking Academy Ruins, right? But if it exiles itself, sure, then that won't do the trick.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going off and just stating all this stuff, but I do think that that's kind of a different way that the door can go. I'm probably making it too complicated. That's what EDH is for sometimes, making things too complicated.
There's innocent uses for this card. I think a lot of people will be inclined to just play it with cards that work with +1/+1 counters, sort of like Atraxa, but that's kind of like the banal use, right? Mm-hmm. It's so easy just to get counters on this card just by playing spells.
Yeah.
That you don't really need those.
Yeah. That does lead us to talk about the last big card in the dragon deck, which is the Ur-Dragon itself. Eminence does reduce casting cost of other dragons by one, so unfortunately he doesn't reduce his own casting cost, which would have been nice. But he
at that point it would be just five colored and then three.
Yeah. Which isn't too bad. It doesn't have trample. I'm not going to complain that it doesn't have trample. It's a 10-10. It's powered up there, arguably, with Progenitus and stuff like that when it comes to sheer power. Whenever one or more dragons you control attacks, you may draw that many cards if you do put that many permanents in your hand on the battlefield.
Wow. Yeah. That's,
I think, obviously, the Ur-Dragon is meant to be the helm of this deck. It's proven its power with its ability. It makes Ramos cost 5, and it makes Origachi cost 5 rather than both their cumulative 6.
Okagachi. Yeah.
At that same token, you are going to have a huge pain in the ass getting this guy out.
Sure. That was such a long. You want to go first, though?
Actually, I really do love this card's abilities, but I think in this state of the game, like, if you get up to 9 mana, like, and you're in a dedicated dragon deck, how many cards do you have in hand? Okay, its ability, making other dragons cost 1 less. Like, how relevant is that in the long, drawn-out thing? I mean, and say if you play this, like, say, after a board wipe, like after opponent's board wipe, it feels kind of awkward because now you spent 9 mana for a 10-10 flyer that you can't get immediate value for. You have to wait. The good thing is it trades for itself, but then you swing and then say you top deck a land and then you have to just put a land in the battlefield. Like, it kind of feels a little awkward.
It's per each dragon swinging, which is something I do like. So if you have 4 dragons on the field, 5 dragons on the field, you just drew 5 cards. So the odds of drawing 5 lands off the top of your deck, especially when you're able to finally cast this guy, I think is pretty slim.
If you have 5 dragons on the battlefield whenever you cast this, then your opponents aren't doing it right.
Yeah, you've already won, right?
Yes. So it's like a win more situation.
See, you really address a really interesting part of building a dragon deck, because when anyone sits down to build a dragon deck, they just want to fill it full of multicolored 5/5 flyers with sweet abilities, right? But the problem with that is that if you just get all these awesome cards in play, then, like, you attack with them once or twice, and you've killed everyone, because they're huge, right? So it's really hard to capitalize the fact that you can use the Ur-Dragon at all, because you get, like, one attack with them, and then you just hit someone for 20, right?
So I just got this weird idea. Hear me out on this. So what if the best dragon commander ever is still Scion of the Ur-Dragon,
right? That's...
So what if you paid 2 and the Scion of the Ur-Dragon then became the copy of the Ur-Dragon on turn 5?
Yeah, is it an attack trigger? How does that? You can use Scion before combat, right?
Anyways. Yeah, you can use Scion before combat.
It's just, okay, I mean that works just fine, right? It lets you cheat a permanent into play for like 2 mana after you cast Scion.
Oh, that's provided Scion's the only dragon on the field. But let's say you do have 2 other dragons.
Oh, yeah,
you can cheat. You draw 3 cards. You put 3 permanents onto play. And then you go Dragonstorm or something like that. There's other things you can do.
But are you going to dedicate a slot just in your 99 for a 9 mana like card?
I've seen people do worse.
I think if I was playing this in Scion and I was not trying to be some degenerate just comboing everyone out, I think I would play this card. In fact, I think you touched upon what the best use of this card is, right? If you really wanted to play this card to its fullest extent, you would probably just put this in the 99 and pull it out with Scion as the helm.
Yeah.
With that said, I really do like this guy at the helm of a dragon deck, though. If you end up in some kind of weird commander metagame where there are lots of, like, flying blockers that can just chump things easily, if you have people who gain lots of life, you can reasonably benefit from this ability, right? I mean, you have to be really playing in, I think, that 75%. You know, commander meta. But at the head of a dragon deck, he's pretty fair and straightforward.
He emanates dragon servant and dragon master shaman or dragon shaman, whatever
dragon
it is.
Dragon speaker shaman.
Not dragon speaker shaman, the one that reduces dragon casting cost by 2.
I thought that was dragon speaker.
Is it dragon speaker?
I could be wrong.
I might be thinking of dragon master outcast. That's why I might be getting the names confused. There are too many things that do dragon things. I think he emanates them fairly well. He just makes it so your dragons cost less.
Yeah, it's Dragon Speaker.
It's Dragon Speaker? Okay. Which of those two cards are getting reprints in this deck, by the way?
Good.
I think Dragon Speaker. I think Dragon Speaker was like at $8, maybe $9 before this. So.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
It hasn't seen a reprint in a long time.
Understandable. Yeah.
So I think it does that fairly well. The fact that at turn one you're going to have a Dragon Master Servant or a Dragon Shaman, whatever, and it's just going to start reducing your cost by one, and eventually you're going to get those costs reduced by two, by three. That's fine. I'm not exactly sure how I feel about the Dragon deck overall. I think we've touched on each of the Dragon Commanders fairly well.
Sure.
And outside of that stupid Cat Dragon, which I think is probably the worst, Urogachi definitely takes that helm for me as the worst Dragon Commander.
Well, we didn't even talk about the Cat Dragon's abilities, right? We just talked about the card being a cat.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's a 5-3 with Flying Trample, and I think whenever you deal damage to something, your opponent has to sacrifice a creature, and you get a 3-3 cat.
Not even that good. They sacrifice something, and if they don't, you get a 3-3 cat.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I really don't like this card at all. I feel like this is just a vanilla creature. It flies, it attacks, it does 5 damage. They can't block it because it does trample, I guess. So, they can't chump it. And then, sometimes, if they have, one big ground guy, then you can just get them with this, and it stops them from playing it.
All right, I got it. How to make this card good. We do Doubling Season, Parallel Lives, that new Anointed Procession from Amonkhet, and we're just going to make this a token-generating cat.
Yeah, but, that you even only get the token if they can't sack a guy. You can't choose to make the token.
Well, here's the thing. I will say this. Against specific opponents, this is going to be a not good card. But again, against other players, especially Voltron builds, this is going to be pretty good because whenever you hit an opponent, they have to sacrifice it. It's not they don't get the choice. They have to sacrifice, and if they don't, you get a cat.
True, it is good against Voltron commanders. I will give it that. It's good against, what's his name, Earl the Miststalker, something like that?
Sure.
And it's good against Xur, provided they don't have that one enchantment that does phasing.
This card does cost 5 mana,
yeah.
Right? If you aren't accelerating any, which hopefully you are, then this card isn't attacking until turn 6.
With Scion, it does come into play turn 4. Or not Scion, with the Ur-Dragon itself.
That is something you need to consider, yeah.
So it's not terrible.
Not with that mana base, though, right?
Not with that mana base. like I said, for me, it's still, outside of the cat, I think Urogachi's definitely the worst legend in the set, unless you're trying to build a 5-color spirit tribal deck, in which case you found the commander finally for yourself. I'm still going with Ramos as probably the best for me overall dragon wise. It's just incredible. Scion's probably middle of the road, or Ur-Dragon itself is in the middle of the road for me.
I really like the Ur-Dragon as commander. I feel like if you wanted to build a dragon deck and you didn't want to be degenerate about it, you would put that guy at the helm. And I like that a lot about that commander. So he, to me, gets mad props for that. And I think definitely the worst is Okagachi. And I think you already know why.
Sorry. I'm not going to argue with that. I kind of like Ramos a little bit better than Ur-Dragon, just because it feels more reasonable to the cast. The other one's just like a benefit for you. For your deck, but not necessarily you're casting it for the sake of casting it. It feels kind of like something that benefits your deck, but I couldn't see him, I can't see him lasting on the battlefield. I can see him being cast and then immediately dying at 9 mana.
Well, with Ramos, if you can cast enough spells, you can effectively cheat this card out into play. Ramos does generate 10 mana eventually.
True.
Let's say you get Ramos out on turn 5 or earlier because you have one of the other two reducers on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So then you just start casting a few more spells. You get more counters on this guy. I think it might be possible to get the Ur-Dragon out on turn 5 with Ramos. But that's in the best, absolute best of situations.
Maybe using Ramos. I mean, you could do something as easy as Elvish Piper, right? If this guy's not sitting in your command zone. Quicksilver Amulet type shenanigans where you just card in hand into play. Boop,
No, I'm just talking about it as the deck as is.
As the deck as is, yeah.
Yeah.
There might be a chance of that.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise I'm just playing Omniscience at that point and just praying to God I do something.
Yeah.
Pray to Emrakul, everyone. Which one would you guys like to hit up next? I'll potpourri it. Would you guys like to hit up Vamps next or Wizards?
I feel like I have a lot more to talk about with the Vampire deck than I do the Wizards deck, so maybe that's a good place for me to start. Unless you'd prefer to go this time. No? Okay. When it comes to the Vampire deck, maybe I'm... Okay, so we've got three commanders. The first one we have is Edgar Markov, and if I can find him real quick to recite the ability, I will do so. Okay, so Edgar himself has eminence in that whenever you cast a vampire, you get a free 1-1. He has haste and first strike, is a 4-4 for 6, and whenever he himself attacks, you get a 1-1 counter on all your other vampires. So, this guy is something that I like quite a lot. He is a great focal point for vampire decks because his ability is just amazing, right? Previously, there weren't any cards... Actually, that's not true. The only card that cared about vampires that was a really, like, obvious way to build a vampire deck around was what's that guy's name? It makes you sacrifice non-vampire guys. Mono black. Name's not coming to me. But aside from that, you didn't really have like a vampire lord to actually build around as a legend. Now we do. We have this guy, and he's got a great ability.
It's Anawan.
Anawan, thank you. Well, here I am saying that I have a lot to talk about. Here, I feel myself stumbling. No. Previously, you didn't really have a way to play all these vampire cards that you might have wanted to before without putting something in helm like Olivia, who is, you know, a fine commander in her own right, but doesn't inherently synergize with your own vampires. She's just sort of a good stuff card. This is a card that makes you want to play a bunch of vampires. And he's in three colors. Even though there aren't really all that many white vampires, if you want to play Sorens.
We do get more white vampires upon our journey to Ixalan.
Do we?
Yes. Vampires is a white tribe in Ixalan, for whatever reason.
Interesting. Okay.
Vampires found religion, folks.
Good to know.
I agree. I think that Edgar Markov, is a pretty decent general. 6 mana for 4-4 with first strike and haste means that whenever you drop him and you can immediately swing with him, you're getting your trigger ability. You don't have to wait a turn or anything like that. It doesn't feel like you're investing your mana on like an uneasy ground. And just because it has its first strike ability. And also, its second ability is whenever it attacks, put a 1-1 counter on each vampire you control. So that counts as himself as well. So you're... In turn, swinging with a 5-5 with first strike.
And haste. And so, haste. Yeah, he's threatening the turn he comes out of the command zone, too.
You see, this is... Maybe I'm just being judgmental about the other two eminence abilities. I'm looking at Edgar Markov's eminence ability as being a bit more ridiculous compared to, like, say, Oboro and obviously the sign, the Ur-Dragon himself.
Oh, you think so? I think this is, like, the worst one. Because, okay, so don't get me wrong. Getting free 1-1s is nice. But 1-1s do just get bricked by 2-2s. Literally, any creature that is bigger than a 1-1, which is practically everything, can block a 1-1 profitably. So whenever people, I find, have small creatures in Commander, unless there's a player with, like, nothing in play and they can just get free pot shots in which case they're doing, like, tiny bits of damage that are mostly irrelevant, then 1-1s just sit there and don't do anything until they end up being, like, sacrifice food for, like, some altar or something.
See, yes, the 1-1s can be sacrifice food, but when you get Edgar on the field, those 1-1s are no longer 1-1s. They become 2-2s.
Right. Presuming that he gets to attack and all those guys...
Yeah.
Well, I guess the vampires themselves don't have to attack.
Yeah.
And he can build them up over time. But still, man, that's going to take time, right?
It's going to take time, plus they're little chump blockers if you need chump blockers.
That's definitely helpful, sure.
I feel like in Commander, generally speaking, you're probably going to be playing, like, 3 cost or higher in vampires than you would be like early drop, like 1 or 2 drops, just because they tend to have like a little bit more of a board presence whenever they're cast. This one, by the time it enters the battlefield, you'll at most probably have about 3 vampires, the 1-1 tokens.
That sounds reasonable.
That is just with 1-1 tokens. I mean, we did get a few really good vamps with Innistrad. We got, like, Falconwrath Gorgrove's 2-1 gives everything madness. We got a few, the other Vampire Lord. Whenever you discard a card, all your vamps get +1/+1. You got Olivia, stuff like that. I think if you were to build a Vampire Tribal, the highest I would go curve-wise with this Vampire Tribal deck would more than likely be 7. I don't want to go over 7 with him. I think Markov is going to be top curve near the top of the curve.
I think you're going to have a hard time finding vampires that cost more than 7.
Definitely. They're I think there's like 2 or 3.
Are there? I'm not sure.
I think there's like 2 or 3, but That's just what I think with him. I really enjoy it. I think we're going to get some more really good stuff with Ixalan. But until Ixalan hits, we're not going to have a lot of white vamps to put in this. We're just going to effectively put Sorin.
Yeah, I think it's mostly if people just want to play with Sorin.
Yeah, and this one makes me feel like it's a little bit more risky. The reason being is that it feels like you'd have more than any other set, a dedicated vampire deck where you're dropping a lot of vampire creatures. And the problem with that is that you become... like, you have a risk to board wipes, which...
Sunlight, yeah, garlic.
Yeah, a bunch of things. There's a lot of things that could just ruin your day. And
wooden stakes.
And, like...
really Italian pasta.
Yeah.
And by itself, it's a very linear approach. But the problem is that just because of how EDH is, you have to have almost a broader range of approaches. Unless you can do it very quickly, which I don't think this guy can do. I think it's a risk.
It's true. Before we go, I guess, further on to Edgar, I guess let's look at the other two commanders that come with this deck.
Yeah, I feel like I've said my bit when it comes to Edgar.
So the next one, I think, the other one of the alternate commanders for this deck is Licia, Sanguine Tribune. 8-drop, 5...
Sanguini
Tribune. 8-drop, 4-4, first strike, lifelink. Cost 1 less for each life you gain this turn, which is a unique take on it, I think. And then you can pay 5 life once each turn to put 5 counters on this thing. I don't know necessarily how I feel about it. I think it's a very big eradication target. The fact that you can reduce its commander cost, potentially, especially if this thing dies multiple times, like it more than likely will, because just by gaining life, I think, is very good. The only deck I could see this card going in, other than a Vampire Voltron, is Baby's First Combo in Commander.
You think so? I'll tell you exactly. I know how I feel about this card. I hate this card. I think this is the worst card that they printed in the entire expansion. Like, this one's just terrible.
Even worse than Origachi?
Okagachi?
Okagachi. I don't know why I keep calling it Origachi, but Okagachi, yes.
Yeah, I think I hate this card more than Okagachi. Like, this one's just... At least Okagachi has a decent body for his cost, right? And if you wanted to play Five Color Spirits, I think you got a commander now for that. So there's still silver lining with that card. This card, okay, first off, there's nothing red about this card. You look over these abilities, paying life to get +1/+1 counters, lifelink, costing less when you're gaining life. The only thing red on this card is First Strike. And white already has First Strike, and it's like, what, tertiary in black? So first off, there's no reason for this card to be red in the first place. For two, it's just a guy. It doesn't do anything. It attacks... It can get bigger, and it can gain you life. But it doesn't do anything. What are you going to do? Build a Mardu life gain deck for this guy and just have a, you know, good life outlet? It's not even a good life outlet. You spend 5 mana, and you get a permanent +3/+3. This just... What do you want to do with this card?
I actually disagree. I think that this card is secretly a... pretty decent card. Now, it has to have a specific build around, but life gain itself is probably one of the most unrewarding but easiest abilities to trigger, and there have been decks dedicated to life gain. I can see this thing, you know, say turn 4 costing only 3 mana in a specific builds. I can, because it's not each instance of life gain, it's each one life gained. So all you have to do is gain 5 life and it becomes a 3 mana.
I think that's the hardest thing about the card, because if you want to make this guy effective, most life that you end up gaining a commander is not in a massive chunk. It's like incremental life gain, right? That's the kind of life gain most players like. To make the discount anything useful, like, you have to gain a whole bunch of life all in one turn. In which case, how much mana did you just pay to do that?
So I actually, hear me out. I think this is, I kind of agree with Bill here. I think this is baby's first combo, baby's first commander. If you're looking to get in commander, I think this guy's a great start. And this is why all those one drop sorcery speed gain 5 life cards in white now have a use.
No, there's no way you play those.
Yeah, you cannot waste a slot just for one instance of gain X life.
Oh, you know, but you're going to waste 10 slots for this.
But here's the thing.
He's going to cost 3 consistently.
But see, after you got that first, you know, what is it, White Sun's Blessing or whatever, then it's up to 7, right?
Yeah.
Here's the
seven
thing.
Colorless?
I don't think this guy is good in the vampire tribal deck. he has to be in a deck built exclusively to bolster his ability. Commander, other than any other format, life is more of a resource than like a ticking. And just the ability to like to pay five to like to put 3/1/1 counters on it each turn. You can do it the first turn it enters, so now it becomes a 7/7, and then the next turn it becomes an 11/11. I mean, sorry, 10/10. I think that you can put a lot of pressure on your opponents. Because in two swings, like because of his ability, in two swings you can in turn kill your opponent.
Unless they block with any creature.
Yeah.
He is a commander damage creature, so this is why I keep referring to Baby's First Combo. If you don't know, it's Sanguine Bond and Exquisite Blood.
Sanguine Blonde?
Sanguine Blonde. Yes.
Excuse me.
Gain every time you gain life, your opponent loses life, and every time your opponent loses life, you gain life. So it's an infinite combo. This guy, if you can't trigger it, this guy allows you to trigger that combo effectively at any time, even if he gets stifled for whatever reason. It can still trigger. I think that's where this guy's going to sit. I don't think he's going to be anywhere near top tier commander. I think he is going to be a very intro deck commander. That's all I see him as, is an intro deck Voltron-style commander. You're going to try to get those cards out. You're going to gain a shit ton of life. You're going to put Felidar Sovereign in the deck, because why the heck not? You're going to put Sierra Avatar in the deck, because you want to gain more life.
Yeah, I mean, those would go there if you really wanted to play this card as commander. Mm-hmm. You're just going to play it with every useful card with life gain.
So. And Sierra Avatar, turn one, gain 6 life. Now this guy costs 3. You can still get him out on turn 3 with Sierra Avatar. If you have the...
If you've got the colors right.
If you've got the colors right, you got the nuts. You have to build the deck specifically around this deck, and as long as an opponent doesn't have a Skullcrack on an Isochron Scepter for whatever reason, I think you're going to do okay with the deck. It's not going to be top tier, but it is going to be annoying, I guess.
I have one nice thing to say about this card. I like the Hellenistic art style of it.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You want to talk about...
I think it's Mathis.
Mathis.
The Fiend Slayer.
Yep. Mathematician.
I actually like Mathis a lot, especially in a one-on-one build, because it triggers during your end step, so whenever he enters the battlefield, you'll be able to, you know, get that ability. He doesn't have to be on the battlefield for its ability to trigger, because it's just how the bounty counter works. It's like a specific counter on each creature. So, and it hurts more, I think, in a multiplayer, because you're giving other players card advantage with you, and that feels a little bit odd.
It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, but in a one-on-one, especially since it's a 3 mana cost, 3/3 with Menace, which is a reasonable cost, I think that it could, I mean, you could generate a lot of value with this.
I think the,
you're gonna have to go up there.
When this creature dies, each opponent. I think the thing with this card is what it's really trying to encourage is using the bounty counters as a way to draw removal from other players to get them to kill something. So, like, let's say that your opponent has some 5/5 dragon in play that's attacking you every turn, and you're losing a lot of life and you don't want to take any more hits from it. You play this guy down, you put a bounty counter on it, because your opponent isn't normally incentivized to kill the creature that's attacking you. They're just like, sweet, I will just let you continue to taking, you know, 5 damage. It's not my problem yet. Let's get you out of the way. But then, suddenly, you know, now they can exchange that removal spell or something for a card, which is something they may or may not want to do. Is that a strong argument for this card?
Well,
Well, the key for me is the fact that it specifically has to read when that creature dies. So if there's an exile effect on the field, those bounty counters aren't going to do anything.
You're right, it doesn't work with when it leaves play.
Uh-huh.
That's unfortunate, isn't it?
But the other thing about this card is you can multiply those bounty counters. It doesn't say that the creature can only have one bounty counter on it. You can put 3-4 bounty counters on it. So if you find a way to proliferate those bounty counters, if you find a way to keep doing more tokens on those bounty counters, you can give more incentive to your opponents to deal with a creature you don't want to deal with.
I do like this with proliferate. That's a good idea. I didn't thought of that. Because it's so slow otherwise, right? Only one per end step?
I can't think of a good white proliferate spell, a good black one that's continuous, a good red one. I mean, a Chi doesn't even fit into Atrox's colors, though.
You would have to do it Contagion Engine, I believe.
Or the Clasp, right?
Yeah.
So.
Which it seems kind of like narrow, I think, for Flippery, although that is a very nice idea. Another thing I like about this card is EDH or Commander, is a multiplayer format, generally. And this one, it's good on one-on-one, but it also causes, like, interesting interactions, like it was mentioned earlier, in multiplayer game, because you're putting a bounty on an opponent's creature. Now, all of that player's other opponents can now use their resources to destroy that because they know that they're not necessarily losing resource because right. they're getting something back for it.
It's the kind of card that plays well in multiplayer games, like in terms of like a game design perspective. Games are more interesting when this card is involved. But that said, is giving your opponents more cards in your best interest? Usually not. However, I think when people open a precon and play with this guy, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I just realized he actually combos with Leticia or whatever the other legendary vampire's name is, just for the sheer fact that you gain 2 life.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something.
I didn't even... The life gain was like...
Life gain's
a completely
irrelevant.
Completely irrelevant writer I didn't even realize was on there. Yeah.
But it can make that vampire effectively cost a bit less, which...
You know what? I do like the fact that this card does give 2 life, because if for whatever reason the situation occurs where somebody just needs to gain life and 2 is enough, it opens up new lines.
And if you're able to proliferate, you can put 3-4 counters, bounty counters on, let's say, an Ulamog or something. And if your opponent's able to destroy it...
Destroy the Ulamog?
The regular.
They're original, indestructible, aren't they?
No. Original is... Oh, yeah. Yeah, original is indestructible.
They're going to have a hard time destroying that one.
It can work. There are cards that get rid of indestructibility. You can go Hour of Devastation. All cards lose indestructibility. The Ulamog already takes 5. It just needs 5 more damage.
You have to, like, twin cast.
Yeah. Jeez. So that's probably not going to happen.
Oh, there are other ways, but you get my point. I mean, if you can put as many bounty counters as you can on a certain creature, if you really want a creature gone, I would say arguably, what's that elf that whenever you swing at an opponent, that opponent draws cards?
Edric.
Yeah. I would compare this guy almost to Edric to me. They're both about the same cost. They both kind of do the same thing by drawing cards. This guy just does it at a slower rate. But if he can stack up those bounty counters on one thing, each opponent can draw multiple things. So you could, in theory, play this as a group hug or a group hate type of commander as well.
That's where I see that a lot of people taking that direction.
Yeah, and so unassuming. It's a 3-mana 3/3. And its abilities is very, like, subtle. So I find that your opponents won't see this enter the battlefield, and they'll feel they have to immediately destroy it, like Animar or something like that.
But who do we think is the best and worst for this?
For me, I didn't really say whether or not I liked Mathis all that much, and I do like him. But I really do like, I think, the Edgar the most, with definitely Leticia being the least for me.
I think... This is a really tough one because I feel like all of them are really close. Like, one doesn't stand out to be more powerful than the other one. I like Edgar, but I feel like his ability is the most risky. Just because of what you're dedicating and, like, the possibility of just being blown out by, you know, specific removal.
Aether spouts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff like that.
Leticia, like, I think it's the strongest, but you have to have, like, a specific type of build for this one to make it strong. And maybe even in that, maybe that's not enough. I'm not 100% sure. It's something to test. Initially, I thought it looked very strong. But I would say Mathis is my favorite just because its ability is... like, promotes the format better, and it's kind of an interesting ability. It's kind of unassuming, and maybe because of that I like it the most.
Yeah, it's definitely got I think the most interesting ability of the three, for sure.
I would agree to some extent. They all definitely have different builds. They all don't really mesh together. At the same time, they kind of mesh together for me. I agree with you. I think Edgar is probably the best. I think it's so far the biggest eminence ability that I've enjoyed. He pumps his own team. He can make his vampires 2/2s, 3/3s, so on and so forth. As for the one I dislike the most, I enjoy Mathis, but I think he was going to require a bit more of a specific build than Leticia. in the deck, he might not fit the best for right now. He seems kind of slow overall, when I could just replace him with the Phyrexian Arena if I want to draw cards. In black.
Sure.
But he could be his own great leader in a Mardu, like, group hate or group hug deck. He's a very political card, and I really enjoy political cards. And I think he has very good potential. But that's just my thought on it.
I think we just, like, have a hard time, like, narrowing down, like, what do we feel is the strongest, what do we feel is the weakest.
Let's go back to dragons. We can do that easy.
I don't know. I felt like it was pretty simple for me. I felt as though, you know, y'all really like Lissia for some reason, which just baffles me, because this creature literally does nothing but attack, and all it does in return is just gain life. So, to me, this card is just utter trash, and you should just never play it ever. But y'all, for some reason, think that the discount just makes it bananas, and, you know, I don't think that's going to be very good, because it's going to cost so much life in one turn to make it ever, you know, reasonable to recast. So,
like,
it being the worst to me is, like, so obvious, but...
like I said to me, I'm kind of defending this from an entry point level. I'm thinking of this, again, as baby's first commander, baby's first combo, Sanguine Bond, Exquisite Blood, plus this guy, plus Felidar Guardian. He's going to make the life gain cards have a bit more of a structure. I'm looking at a life gain deck at this, and that's
but
just
my idea
of it.
There's so many of those already in white-black alone. Why would you just play a guy that does nothing but attack in Mardu?
Because why not?
Because red doesn't even have any life gain cards.
Oh, it does now.
No, this card, okay, it has lifelink, sure. You know, this might be like one of the few red cards with a lifelink, I guess. Sure. Aside from that, okay, I'll give you that point. Anyways, I've had enough to say about that. You want to move on to Wizards?
Yeah, why don't you kick us off on that Wizards.
All right, so Wizards, I think, is the one commander deck that all three of the commanders... No, I take that back. I thought the cat deck was also pretty sweet. But the Wizards deck has some really exciting commanders. I'll start by talking about Kess, because I think it's the one people are most excited for. This card is like Corridor, but for instants and sorceries. So it's a 4-mana 3/4 flyer that during each of your turns, you get to cast an instant or sorcery spell from your graveyard, just period. And if you do, you exile it. It's not free, you still have to pay for it, but it does just let you cast in flames one card for free. But, excuse me, not for free. Sort of. Right? You still pay the mana, but there's no other cost attached to it other than just, you know, this commander. So, yeah. And that is like, whoa. that's powerful, right?
Yeah.
There's so many things you can do with that. The obvious thing that people are talking about is like time spells, sort of like in the same vein as like Narset and Light Master. Is it in Light Master, the 3/2?
I think so.
Okay. I don't want to mix it up with the Planeswalker. So, like, as disappointing as that is, you do have to play something that is, like, a proactive spell with this. You can't play it with, like, counter magic, because you can only use the ability on your turn. So, early game, you can do things like, you know, preordain effects, you know, card filtering, card fixing type things. Later, you can, you know, start playing cards that, like, progress your board or removal spells, anything of that nature that you can just get free value out of this every turn. And in that sense, you could almost think of it as, like, Phyrexian Arena, the commander, sort of. Like, it just, if you just always cast a spell out of your graveyard every turn. I guess more like Outpost Siege, the commander, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I like it quite a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I think out of all the Wizards, I think this is the strongest, because it's a fair body. It's a 3/4 flying for 4 mana. And also, it has kind of almost like a Snapcaster ability, but the benefit of it is that you don't have to target your spell in your graveyard, and you can target at any time during I say target whenever your opponent can't respond to it, because once you put it on the stack, it's on the stack. You can't say, well, this card right here, I'm going to, you know, cast this this turn. Is
yeah, there's no snap cast or target this. It's yeah. Just at any point during your turn, you could be playing any one of your spells, and it doesn't have to be at sorcery speed either.
Yeah, and also even with counterspell, it protects maybe spells that you want to see resolve with your counterspell. They're like, oh, in response, I'll just counter it from this with this counterspell in my graveyard.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting, because despite I think this card not being all that great with counterspells, there are a couple that you could play that have like Cryptic Command is always a good example, because it has other modes. There are a couple that you could play that if you just happen to have just a counterspell in your graveyard ever, it almost sort of makes all your spells uncounterable that turn, right? Because, okay, except for the one you cast from your graveyard, right? Because if you cast a card from your hand and there's a counterspell in your graveyard, even if people like want to interact with it, like if they know that the counterspell is sitting in your graveyard, they have to make you burn it. And if they don't want to make you burn it because, you know, it's not worth their, you know, not worth losing the card over, then, you know, it just is going to resolve. So there are a lot of interesting implications for that. Similarly, like, if you have a removal spell in your graveyard, maybe it only hits, like, creatures of a certain kind, then you might just be discouraged from playing a creature of that kind because you know that they can just remove it with that card that's already there. So,
I mean, another kind of interesting build, because it has the right colors, is, say, like, Wheel Effects or Self-Mill. Throwing a bunch of spells into your graveyard makes this, like, the Swiss Army knife of wizards, because you can cast anything during your turn.
So for me, I enjoy Kes. I think she's amazing. She's the flashback commander that we always wanted. She is also the storm commander that we've effectively always wanted. Those are the two decks I think she's going to fit into the most. Don't remember all the spells from the pre-con, I'm not going to lie.
They were awful.
So you're not going to get a lot of value out of her from the pre-con. But if you take her out of the pre-con and put her in your own deck, she's going to be an amazing head. Even a secondary head, if you just want to put her in part of the 99, she is an amazing card. You're not going to want to let her live. You don't want to let her touch your graveyard. You don't. She's going to be an amazing Storm Commander. For the sheer fact that I can now cast my Grapeshot or cast my Tendrils from grave, if for whatever reason all abilities of it get countered, I have another way to get it back. Love her for that. I, though, don't think she's the best. I think one of the other wizards in the deck is slightly better than her, and it's ever so slightly.
Yeah. I think we'll see Kes a lot more than the other ones, because I think she's easier to use. But in a dedicated wizards deck, Inala is is probably more powerful. This guy's ability is just crazy. So, of all the Eminence abilities, man, is this one great. The one downside to this Eminence ability, before I get into it, is that it does cost mana unlike the other ones. So, although, like, Araba requires you to have a cat in play, which I guess is, like, some kind of investment, whereas, like, just Ur-Dragon himself, just, like, passive discount, right? Like, that's something you can just always use. Mana is always helpful. Inala, you actually have to pay additional mana into. So it's not free. But whenever you have another wizard enter the battlefield that isn't a token, you can just pay one to make a copy of it until end of turn. And it has haste, so you can even get it in combat. And it's not a 1-1. It's just another creature, right? And that's just bonkers, man. Like, the obvious use with this is as almost a panharmonicon, right? Where you play something like a Venser, Shaper Savant, and then you pay one extra, and now you've got two Vensers, right? So one of them, you know, bounces an extra card, so you sort of just, like, double the ETB effect of any creature you have for one mana. But it's so much more than that, because you can tap them to Invala's ability if you have enough wizards in play to make them lose 7 life in case you don't want to attack.
As long as they're not legendaries. Venser is legendary.
Oh, yeah, but you still get the ETB effect.
Yes.
Right, you won't get the tap. You're right. I misspoke there. I apologize. But you can just attack with the wizards as well. Like, if you have any wizard of a decent size and you just decide to pay one to make a copy of it, you can just turn it into damage.
You could also, because she's black, you can put Conspiracy in the deck. So if there are other ETB effects you want to abuse, like Torrential Gearhulk, you now have Torrential Gearhulk, Jace's Vryn's Prodigy, and Snapcaster Mage all in an EDH deck to flashback stuff back from your graveyard to abuse stuff.
To be fair, I don't think this card actually is all that great with Snapcaster, though, even though it's an ETB effect.
Yeah.
My reasoning with that is that Snapcaster itself already costs 2 mana, right? Yeah. And then you have to target a card in your graveyard and want to pay mana for that card.
Yeah.
So let's say that card costs at least 2 mana, right? So then that means you're spending 4 mana. You haven't even made the copy with Inala yet. So, Inala, excuse me. And that would be 5 mana before you even cast another spell. And this is presuming that the spell you're casting is something as cheap as 2 mana. If you cast something that's like 3 or 4 mana, you've got to have a lot of mana to make Snapcaster good with this card.
I think another card that might be interesting with interactions, especially ETB effects, is Conjurer's Closet.
Ooh.
Because it blinks it out and puts it back in, and then you can just pay one to always get double triggers for any ETB effects for wizards.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be on your turn. It's just whenever a wizard comes into play at all.
So here's a card that I think we've kind of missed talking about with this deck. Sundial of the Infinite. Your tokens are now there permanently.
This is one of those cards that you play in this deck for that reason, right? There are always those kind of commander cards where they just have their niche role. Like, they just synergize with certain builds so well that they just end up in that deck. And Sundial seems like it's this one. It's an end step trigger anyways, right?
Yeah.
So you're not even losing the turn. It's just you're paying, what, like one mana to activate the Sundial, I think?
I think it's just a tap. I don't even think it's paying a mana.
Really? Is it just tap?
I could be wrong.
Either way, whatever it happens to be. It's not...
Sundial is paying two, I believe.
Two? Okay. Yeah. Sure. Regardless, I mean, it's not an expensive cost. Whatever you're doing, you know, paying to keep all of your wizards, not just the one that you played, right? All those delay triggers are going to go on the stack at the end of turn, and you can just save all of them that you cast in turn with the Sundial.
It costs one?
Okay.
See, because you could put Paradox... you can put... What is it? Paradoxical Engine? The 5-drop?
Yeah, Paradox Engine.
You could put Paradox Engine in the deck and now just untap all your mono rocks. You could put Basalt Monolith Power Artifact in the deck for infinite mana if you wanted to. There's just so many ways around this particular card that you can abuse this ability. I do think that, to me, Kes is an amazing commander. She's going to be Tier 1, but I think this is just literally one notch above her. Just one.
In Commander? Yeah. I mean, that's... We'll see. I think in the dedicated wizard deck, this guy's definitely going to be super strong. Mm-hmm. I expect to see a whole lot more Kes, though, I think.
Yeah, again, like, all the Eminence cards has to be a dedicated tribal deck, and I like that about the ability, but all of them are going to be dedicated tribal.
Do notice, though, that we're not even really talking about our other ability. Tap 5 wizards, lose 5 life. I don't think anyone...
7 life.
Seven life. I think that's actually a pretty interesting ability. There are a lot of cards that can create token wizards. Things like Sigil Tracer and Docent of Perfection. That it's not the hardest to get a whole bunch of 1-1 wizards, depending on what kind of card you're playing. And
That's right. They made a wizard lord, didn't they?
There are a few. And so you can use this card as a finisher. Like, more than just a value engine, this card can also just end the game in the right position, where you can just come to cast this card, and then just tap, like, 10 wizards, and then somebody just loses 14 life and dies.
Yeah.
So.
I'm not going to argue. She's fantastic. That does leave us to the last commander, which is Marcel the Pretender.
Yeah.
To me, out of the three, I think this is the weakest. I'm not a huge fan of exiling a card out of my hand to have a commander... Granted, you're always going to have that ability of whatever Marcel exiles, plus the additional casting cost when it dies, comes back. Now it exiles a Gilded Lotus and a Soul Ring out of your hand, so now it can tap for both of those. Problem is, it doesn't have haste. Problem is, Pithing Needle takes care of this guy.
How much? I don't expect to see that many Pithing Needles in Commander, but...
I view Pithing Needle as a staple. If you're not running Pithing Needle, you're running Phyrexian Revoker. There's other things you can do. And if you're running this guy, not to say that Declaration of Not's a thing and Nevermore's a thing, but they're things.
Well, sure, but that applies to any commander, right?
It does apply to any commander. I'm not a huge fan of it. Compared to Kes and compared to the other one, I think Marcel's the weakest to me.
Sure, well, I think that's a very easy stance to take.
Yes.
Because the other two are so powerful that I think that the bar would be set pretty high to make this just as good, right?
Yeah.
With that said, I do really like this guy. I think part of it is just the fact that I'm not sure exactly how I need to use him, right?
He doesn't even have haste to activate those abilities.
Right. He just has abilities, right? Whatever they are. So it's not going to be easy to figure out how to use this guy.
Other than Soul Ring, did the deck come with any activated ability artifacts or activated ability creatures that are good?
That's worth checking. I didn't actually check for that. What I did check, though, and this really pissed me off about the Wizard deck. The Wizard deck, if I remember correctly, only has one Tribal Lord in the whole deck. And I think it's that giant. I don't think they reprinted any cards that care about wizards whatsoever. It's literally just a collection of wizards.
I don't even think the wizard's a tribal lord. I don't think he buffs anything. I think you can, whenever you cast a wizard, you could bounce a non-land permanent or some shit, or bounce a permanent.
Right. That's what happens. Yeah. But, I mean, aside from that, what's the point of building a wizard deck when none of your cards care about wizards?
The lord, the Eminence guy's the only one that does.
Right, precisely. So that really bothered me with the wizard deck. Whereas the other decks all have, like, the vampire deck. Sure, you've got things like Blood Lord of Vasgoth, you've got Captivating Vampire, you've got all these other cards that care about, you know, the vampires that you're playing. The wizard deck, just none of that is there. right? So,
basically, now's the time to pick up Wizard Lords while you can. Docile of Abomination or whatever it is about to spike up from 50 cents to $2, folks. You heard it.
Is it Insectile Abomination?
Whatever the lord is that puts out Delvers.
Yeah, the Delver guy. Yeah, right?
Yeah, I honestly,
I want to check the wizard thing.
Out of all of the new commanders, the three-color commanders, I dislike this guy the most. Because Marsile, I realize that it feels like a combo piece. It's a combo general. But its abilities give you card disadvantage. By playing it, if you have nothing in your graveyard to use it to exile, you know, a creature or artifact in your hand is taking one of those things outside the equation. And I feel like that ability itself is like a hindrance to you instead of like a possible gain. And it's not like you get the stack triggers. It's not like if you do a Soul Ring or and a Guild Lotus that you tap it and add mana of any color and two colorless. You can only choose one of those activations. You don't get all the activated. It just has all the activated abilities.
It says you can activate each of those abilities only once each turn.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as like only one of them is a tap ability, you can still use all of those abilities. So you use one that'll like, let's say hypothetically you like exile Gila Lotus or something. You could then use the second card's activated ability, which is like, let's pretend, cost mana to use. So you're like, you tap this guy and then fund, you know, he produces the mana to use this other ability with. So there is sort of things that you can do with him using multiple abilities at once. But that said, this guy's not easy to use at all, and I think that's part of his charm.
So hear me out on this. Is there any, like, ridiculous, other than Gilded Baron, untap ability? Because if you can untap, use an untap thing on him and then use a tap ability to possibly do, like, infinite mana or something.
Yeah, but he can only use those abilities once each turn. So, I mean, it's not a thing you can do with this card.
Yeah.
No, it's not, but I'm just trying to think of, like, a way to kind of say, let's say you exile Gilded Lotus, and let's say you do a Gilded Baron-like effect where you can go Gilded Lotus, float 3 mana, use 2 of it, untap him, do something to that equivalence. I don't know. He just seems like a difficult commander to use.
Yeah.
He's definitely a 3-star tier difficulty, I think.
Yeah, he's rough. But that said, I do like him a lot. The same man that I like Mathis. I think he creates interesting gameplay, and I think that you'll see a lot of creative Marcel decks when this guy sees play. The one thing I do want to say, I looked back up that wizard deck. I was wrong. There are only 2 wizards in the deck. One of them was the giant we mentioned. The other one is Azami. They did reprint Azami, but aside from that, there are no cards that care about wizards in the wizard deck.
Is Azami like high priced? She was at $20 at one.
She got reprinted
like, again
into Oblivion, so I think she's like $2 right now.
Okay,
I could be wrong.
That's a shame. I mean, granted, she was the wizard to use all wizards for the longest time.
Completely off topic, almost. As far as financial worth of some of these decks goes, the cat deck has a Mirari's Wake in it. I don't know what that card is going to be in the future due to this, you know, extra supply entering the market. But at the time before this deck, it was like a $15 card. So I expect to still see, like, what, 10, 8, something like that.
I think it's sitting at 10 right now.
Is it? Okay.
So. Really, if you want to financial-wise, the cat deck for sure is the way to go. I would argue that the vampire deck is also the way to go, just for a card that we might get to later in this cast.
Yeah, it looks like it's being pre-orders sold right now for $8. So, yeah, not what I expected.
Yeah.
It's also got a wide page.
Yeah, they all have goodies. It's just that was the single most expensive card I think I managed to pull out in any of the decks that was a reprint.
Yep.
So
that is something that I did see. We're kind of reprint shy. I know they don't like to do reprints a lot, but I would have liked to see more than just like the traditional Sol Ring Command Tower. I would have liked to see maybe each of the deck hit like a $10 reprint of some kind. Maybe that's just me. I know it's hard to find a $10 dragon, but...
I think a lot of them become difficult because once you reprint them, then their price then lowers.
Yeah.
So it's like, even if you wanted a $10 reprint, let's say they print a $10 card in the set, like, Mirari's Wake being at 15 now is like at 8, allegedly, according to Bill.
Yeah.
Right? That card just halved in price just for being printed. So if you wanted to see a card that was worth $10, you know, you would have to print a $20 card in the set if supply lowered it by that much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that isn't easy, especially when you're building 100-card decks and want to keep it affordable for people to be able to purchase.
Yeah, the only time that you'll see cards, like in Commander sets, that go up to $20 is if they're played in other formats beyond it. Or they're popular enough commanders that they're very much sought after.
Atraxa.
Yeah,
comes to mind.
Speaking of other formats, before, I think the next thing we might segue into is, are any of these cards playable in other formats? But before we go into that, any last thoughts on Wizards? I think my consensus is, what is it? Ilana? Or however you pronounce the name, is to me the best commander.
Inala.
Second, of course, is Kessig. I think they're both like top tier. Inala is just like one notch above Kessig. And I don't like Marcel. I don't. I think it's just too hard to use. It's definitely a three-star commander. And Pything Needle just takes care of him. Not going to lie. Phyrexian Revoker. There's an answer to everything, but those cards are definitely some of the most popular played artifacts in Commander.
I'd argue Sol Ring's the most popular.
No, I'm not saying that, their popular ability goes above and beyond Sol Ring, but they're definitely played in a lot of decks.
I think my favorite of these three is probably Kess. I think she's really easy to use. I think there's a lot of fair uses for the card. I think it's powerful and really everything you could want in just a good Magic card. As far as the worst goes, worst obviously has to be Marcel. He's just so hard to use. I'm going to be excited whenever I see this guy across the table from me, because whenever I do see him, provided that nothing dumb happens with this card and people just use him as some combo, which is going to be immensely hard to do, I don't think that'll happen. This guy is always going to be doing something really interesting when he's across the table from me, so I look forward to that.
I, of course, I like Hess probably the best out of these. Inala is also a very strong ability. But just being able to basically double all your spells, like being able to cast it during your main phase from your hand and then casting it from your graveyard, means that, in a sense, like, you're adding so much more cards to your hand that your opponents are going to have a hard time interacting with you, because you're running like the perfect, like Grixis build is like the perfect control build, and they're going to have a hard time, you know, resolving spells or, you know, causing your spells not to resolve.
I do. Before we leave Wizards, I forgot that this guy's actually a thing in the Wizards deck. Tagam Sidisi's Hand. 6/5, 3/4. You can't draw cards anymore. Whenever at the beginning of your upkeep, you could look at the top three cards of your deck, put one into hand, and put the rest into your graveyard. And then second ability, pay, tap a swamp, remove X cards from graveyard. Target creature gets -X/-X for the turn.
Well, all of these decks have more than the three legends, right?
Yeah, they all have more than three legends.
About the cat dragon, yeah. Whose name continues to fail me. Wasatoru,
something like that.
But yeah, you've got this Tygam, you've got the other Tygam, and the, what was the other one?
Yeah.
Wasatoru, Tygam, and who's the last one? Oh, it's Mono White, that's why.
Balan.
Yeah.
Are they like twins or something?
No, it's alternate reality. So they decided to go with the cons flavor. One of them's before the time shift, and the other one's after the time shift.
Twins with the same name?
Yeah. I mean, parents get lazy sometimes, but...
So do you want to talk about Sidisi's Hand?
The only reason I even bring it up is I just really hate the card.
Do you?
I honestly do. There are decks that will abuse that, but... I just don't like it. I find it very hard to like. I don't like exiling cards out of my graveyard to give a single creature -X/-X. I don't... His first ability is nice. It's a pseudo-brainstorm. But that's it. To me, it's a pseudo-brainstorm. Because sometimes you're... Not every time you're not going to want to put two of those cards in the graveyard. I'm guaranteeing you that you're going to be mana-screwed at some point. And you're going to want some mana. And then you're going to have two really good cards and the one mana that you need.
Right. Now that you mention it, I don't think I'm a big fan of this card either. He's not a bad card, I think. I think it's a fine card. I'm glad that it exists. But this card is very similar to Tomorrow. Is that his name? Azami's Familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That one's a 6 mana and gives you the draw replacement, where every time you draw a card, instead you do the top 3 instead, yeah. Right? This only does that for your draw step,
yep.
Right? And in exchange for that, all you get is a reduced mana cost and the ability to exile the cards that you discard instead. to its ability to kill creatures. And that's a reasonable exchange. It's not a terrible trade to make. But I think in most cases I would rather just be playing Tomorrow, right?
I'd rather be playing Doomblood.
Well, I mean, there's other cards that make this kind of interesting. Paradox Engine would be kind of cute, because you can have multiple upkeeps. Especially if you're running like multiple colors.
Paradox Haze, right?
Yeah, Paradox Haze, sorry. Okay. I was also, whenever I was looking at this card, thinking of the one card where he protects you, but you have to skip your draw step. And this is kind of one way to get around it.
Protection. Solitary Confinement?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, if you're running an Eskerville, that'd be kind of like an interesting combo.
Oh, geez. Then you have to discard cards to Solitary Confinement, and then. Okay.
But yeah, I'm not very impressed with that. The other Tygam, though, I think is pretty bonkers.
Oh yeah, if you just want to segue into that guy, yeah, that the other Tygam I think is great. When I saw this guy when he got like super spoiled early, this guy is just phenomenal, right? Like
the only problem with him is he's not a dragon. So if you want the flavor of having an all dragons deck, sure, you can't play this. But he's basically a Cavernous Souls on a stick that gives your instants and sorcerers rebound. So if you can fit him into the 99, imagine having Dragonstorm on rebound for whatever reason.
I don't even think you need to play this guy as a commander, right?
Yeah. It's not even that, but I don't even think you need to run dragons.
Sure, like, no, the dragon part's just gravy, right?
It's instance and sorcery's ability, like especially if you can give it flashback, like is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't consider this because rebound is a lot less sexy than just instant copies of a card. But this card is basically Swarm Intelligence for 4 mana, right?
Yep.
Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you are going to get a copy of it. It's just going to take you a turn before you get that copy.
Well, it has to attack this turn. That is the only
stipulation. Oh, you're right.
There
it
is
does.
A stipulation.
Okay.
But I feel like that drawback isn't super big.
Well, it does imply that he has to be able to attack profitably, so it does change the way you build your deck, right?
You basically now have to put a Rogue's Passage in the deck. You have to make him almost a suit-up commander, which is kind of why I like him more for the dragon ability, I think. The only problem is there's not really a lot of good of white-blue dragons. You just have Ojutai and Ojutai.
I'm sure I can pick out some white ones.
There are some.
I might have a hard time with blue.
There are some white ones, and there are some mono-blue ones. If you want to run him as a commander. As part of the 99, I think he's fantastic. Again, the only problem being if you want to swing into something and you have rebound, it might not be the best situation. Yes. Comparing Tygam to Tygam, this one's hands down, fantastic.
I like the white-blue one way better.
What's the...
The last one?
The Balan, I know, is the mono-white one, and Balan's just insane, too. He's another equipment commander. I don't even want to really get too much into him. Just play every single sword known to mankind, some Swiftfoot boots, and you're good to go.
Man, I don't... See, this guy I don't actually like all that much, because to me, I think the ability to attach all equipment to him is kind of cool, because you can do it at instant speed, and it, like, can mess with combat. But... Why would you want to use this guy as a commander? Like, nothing about this card really feels legendary to me. Like, he sometimes has double strike, always has first strike, and you can put gear on him cheap. If you want to get commander damage in, right, I guess that's about it.
And I heard, like, the argument played before, and I'll mention on this one, is just pure steel paladin does it better. Like, if you have Metalcraft, you can attach it all for zero.
For zero, right.
And also, whenever you cast an equipment card, you draw a card.
One of the things that I'm finding that has become problematic with equipment-based decks in this set, I think, is that there are so many recent cards that make playing equipments and equipping equipments dirt cheap. And so they keep printing more of these types of cards, and you only really need, like, one of those abilities. Like, once you have... what was it? Sigarda's Blessing or whatever?
Sigarda's Aid, I think.
Sigarda's Aid, right. Once you have that, you're set, right? Like, you don't need to worry about those kind of effects much more. And so many of these cards continue to have that redundancy, and I don't think it's helpful.
I would agree. Maybe I'm just gun-hoing on this guy a little too hard. I just think that if you want to do mono-white equipment, yes, Pure Steel Paladin does it better, but I don't think Pure Steel Paladin is what you want to be looking at. You want to be comparing him to, I think her name is Kimba, the other white Ka Regent. Whenever she gets equipped, put a 2-2 whatever 2/2 token into play. I think that's where you need to be comparing him to. And Kemba allows you to generate an army, whereas this guy allows you to go gung-ho and kill one person, potentially. There, if you could find a way to get multiple attack combats with him, that's fantastic, but I don't think white has that. If you find a way to, whenever he deals damage, also deal that damage to another opponent, I think white maybe have, like... A little bit. There might be like one or two random cards here or there. Yeah. There has to be another way.
I have this to contribute to. Yeah. I guess another reason I don't really like this card is that it innately has first strike, and one of the other abilities is that it grants double strike. If all you're going to do is attach equipment to this guy, do you know how easy it is just to get double strike just as an ability on an equipment? Like, if you really wanted it, you could just play an equipment that grants those abilities, right? So that doesn't really feel like an incentive for me to want to play this card as a Voltron Commander. The only ability that really makes me want to play this guy is the fact that I can attach everything onto him at instant speed. Yeah. That makes him, like, really difficult to block.
I actually kind of got sad. I was like, you mentioned attach all equipment. I had to look down at his card real quick. I was hoping it said all equipment, period. Not all equipment you control.
It is the ones you control, right? It's not, you don't get to steal everyone's equipment. Yeah, that'd be,
because then he would be worth playing, right? You get everyone's detail.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Wouldn't get to spend the counters, though, right?
No.
Still don't control it. Yeah. You're giving them counters. Ugh.
Yeah. but you know what? You have one terrifying cat.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, that's it for all the legends, isn't it?
Yeah, all the new stuff. So I guess I think we've kind of talked about all of the legends, and I think we're all kind of in agreement that the white-blue Tagam is really good, or Tagim, however you pronounce his name.
Tagam.
I think that's probably the best alternate legend. Any disagreements? Because the other one's other Tagam, Balan, and the Cat Dragon.
For some reason, Balan's not coming to me. Which one is Balan?
It's the cat we were just talking about.
Oh. Balan, Tygam, and...
Cat Dragon.
Oh, yeah. Tygam, the blue-white one, definitely, of those four, for sure. Mm-hmm. That's the only one I even just think is, like, worth mentioning at all, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that segues us into the next thing, which is, are any of these cards playable in a format outside of EDH? To me, only one really stands out as being incredibly playable. But I'm going to go ahead and let you guys have the first go on it.
What do you think, Bill?
I mean, my first thought is going to be Kess, because I think in like a dedicated control build, you have to think that all these would have to be in Vintage or Legacy.
Right.
Is
Cube. a lot of these are playable in Cube, I'm sure.
Yeah, no doubt. I think Kess is a maybe, but that's the only one that I would constitute as like a maybe. The other ones just don't feel as strong to me that they could be viable in other formats.
Yeah, I mean, I have to pretty much just back you up on that one. Like, I don't feel like any of these cards are really Legacy playable, with the possible exception of maybe Kess. Like, I don't even know if a Legacy deck's gonna want Kess. I don't know enough about the format, to be honest. So
for me, I actually disagree. I think there are one, maybe two cards for sure that have the ability to be played. The first is getting a lot of hype right now. Maybe it's just hype, but that's the instant Teferi's Protection.
Yeah.
We're talking about if any of these cards are viable in another format.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I love that card.
Yeah.
Why would you expect to see that one play the Legacy?
I just think it's a great fog effect, and it deals with Emrakul. Because not only can Emrakul not swing at you, but you can't be annihilated that turn. I think it's a good panic button to give you an extra turn against Emrakul and encounters to their turn, because all your stuff is gone until your next turn. So Emrakul's extra turn ability is now null and void.
Maybe. I mean, that just seems so narrow to me, right?
Yeah.
Like,
to be quite honest, that to me, I can't see... Like, this is a really strong ability, but in decks that this would be good against, it's too slow for.
What?
So, like, Emrakul just swing at you next turn, and then knock out six permanents. Because it's exiled, so it's not like you can snap it back. You're spending resources and three mana for just the ability to not die that turn.
I mean, it's just more than that, right? Like,
all that stuff is gone until your next turn. So Emrakul swings, they can't go off. So if they have to pass the turn to you for your stuff to phase back in.
Right, and then you have another turn to deal with an Emrakul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're in a position...
How are you going to do that, right?
Yeah, if you're in a position that you're holding this, like, why not run something else that actually has more of a, like, an impact with Emrakul instead of running something that's just going to fog
a turn?
Yeah, a turn to yeah. hopefully draw into another.
Here's why I think this card will see no Legacy play. There's a card that exists in Magic called Counterspell, where you spend two mana and you get a counter, a target spell. So if any one spell is a problem, you can instead just play Counterspell and deal with that spell. This card costs more mana than that and only hits a narrow subset of things that, you know, work with it, right?
Yeah. There's only one type of deck that this works really well in, and that's against Ad Nauseam decks or Grapeshot decks.
All where, in combo?
Yeah. Because if they try to Grapeshot you or Ad Nauseam, that you can survive past it. But here's the problem. They're comboing on turn two, and this can be cast on turn three. Yeah. So chances are that you'll still die without being able to cast this.
And I imagine even if you could play this card as an answer to them, there are probably also other solutions that you might find equally viable. Yeah, I just don't see any use for this card outside of Commander.
I don't know. That's just my first initial thought. I think it is one of the more expensive cards that everyone's kind of specking on right now. I think on Star Sitting, it's going for like $10.
Because it's badass.
Yeah, it is. It is badass. There are combos with this that you could take effectively infinite turns. Your stuff will be phased out until it's your next turn with this, and it's just going to sit there. You're going to deck your opponent, do whatever you have to do. There's a lot of things you could do with this card. The only other card that really stood out to me, actually, was Is It Chemister? I'm not necessarily saying it's going to see play. It just kind of stood out to me. 3-drop, 1/3 with haste. You pay a red, tap it. You get to exile something from an instant or sorcery from your grave. And then you pay 2, sacrifice it. You can cast whatever you exile for free.
Yeah, I like this guy a lot, too. With that said, I don't think he'll see play in any eternal formats. He's just way too slow for that. Like, he has haste, but it's like 3 to cast and then like what, 1 to activate. So it's like 4 mana, and then you don't even get the spell that you cast that turn because you got to tap him again to sack it, right?
Most likely dead by that point.
Yeah. So that's like way too slow. But, you know, in a format like Commander, you can get some real value out of this guy, right? You sort of like flashback your whole graveyard all at once. With that said, he does work a lot like Kess in that you can't get reactive spells with this card. You have to be able to get proactive spells, because if you don't, like, counter spells just don't do anything with this guy, right? Oh, well, actually, you know what? You can sack this guy at any time, right? It doesn't have to be sorcery speed. Okay, so this card's a little bit better than that because you can respond to things with this. But still, I mean, they'll see that coming, right? So a little bit is lost there? I don't know. Still seems like works best with proactive cards rather than reactive ones.
Yeah. For me, there is one card that I think, and my Patriots will probably think I'm insane for saying this, but there's one card I think that will possibly see Legacy play, maybe in sideboard with Death and Taxes.
And that's the White Curse.
No, that's... it's Stalking Leonin. It's the 3 mana, 1 white, 2 colorless for 3/3. Whenever it enters battlefield, you secretly choose your opponent, because you only have one opponent.
Right.
Reveal the player of chosen choice and exile target creature that's attacking you this turn, if it's controlled by that player. Activate this ability only once. So I think it's kind of interesting because you're running vials to, you know, violin creatures. If they're running, like, say, a reanimator build or something like that, you can flash this in, you know, choose your opponent, and then exile the creature. But you still have a 3/3 on field for 3, which is a reasonable rate. And a reasonable threat, like in kind of a control build like that.
You get a, like, Flicker Wisp it, then after you use the first charge, you can, like, recharge it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would agree. Just for the sheer fact it also gets around Hexproof. Grant, Hexproof isn't really that big of a huge issue in Legacy.
It only gets around Hexproof of the player, but not the creature, because it does target.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. So if your opponent has Hexproof for whatever reason, it does get around that. It does deal with Emrakul in a sense, because Emrakul can't be targeted by effectively instants and sorceries. So it can get around that. It's just another way to deal with that. It deals with Grizzlebrand. It deals with a lot of reanimation spells. So I would fully agree that this guy is going to make it more than likely as one of maybe two of into a Death and Taxes build.
Oh, you think so? I think even that's going too far. But yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
It'd have to be sideboard because it's only specific types of decks, but this could be really powerful against those decks.
Yeah.
Like a creature aggressive deck.
I think you have the best call. I think if there's any card that we'll see play, it's probably that one. But even then, I wouldn't put any bets on it.
Yeah. It's a maybe, a strong maybe, but that's the only one I can think of.
I mean, it's not like that 3-drop Merfolk that has protection from player. It's not True Name Nemesis. Thank you. We haven't seen the power level of True Name Nemesis in a long time, and they keep printing Scavenging Ooze, and Scavenging Ooze was a godsend initially. Now I think it's sitting at like $8. So I don't know. It's definitely interesting when you look at it. I think kind of toned down the EDH power of this, or EDH power, the legacy power of this set a little bit.
I'm happy with that.
I mean, they printed other cards in this set that I take that back. There are other cards. There's one card that was printed called Swords of the Plowshares. apparently that's a good one in Legacy.
Soul Ring is also pretty good in Vintage, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You guys got me. The reprints are real, folks.
Yeah.
Pick up 50 soul rings, hold them for the next few years, pray to God they don't get reprinted next year.
Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah. Oh, you never know. They like to ban things.
Oh, there's no chance soul ring will ever get banned, ever.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's been grandfathered into the format, right? Like, the format would have to, like, change radically in the way that people play it in order for, you know, the rules committee to consider it, because it is not ever going to be on that list. If it was, it would have been there by now.
Yeah, I would agree, but you never know. The rules committee could all just decide to get drunk one day and have a party, just ban things out of spite.
Sounds highly unlikely.
There's so many other cards.
There's a ton of cards.
Potpourri, what do you guys want to hit, if there's anything?
Okay, well, a few things. We mentioned Teferi's Protection a little bit. I really like this card because I think there's some really odd combos that you can do with this that are really enticing to me. If you manage to skip like all of your turns with, like, say, a Chronotog or something, and continue passing turns to other players, then you can sit there with not having your, like, sort of like a Platinum Imperium emblem as well as a Progenitus emblem on yourself, and then just, like, try and win the game only on other players' turns. I think that's a really exciting idea and might open up another deck, depending on, like, the kind of decks that people build this effect with. I think there's boring ways to do it, like just trying to sit there and hope you get lucky, and I don't think that'll work very well or create good games of Commander either, but I think there's also interesting ways you can do this by like trying to like build a deck where you're in the game but also you just never take a turn again, because like somehow you end up sitting in play with like a Seedborn Muse, Burgeoning, Consecrated Sphinx, and the Alcanor or something, and then you just play the game on other people's turns like regular Magic.
Yeah, I like it because it's both a proactive spell and a reactive spell. Like if your opponent Armageddon,
yeah, or like Cyclonic Rift, yeah.
It's just like, no, that's not going to happen. And it also can combo with spells that you control, which makes it like really viable on EDH. And I think that's why it's going to be very popular.
There is one other spell that I can think of off the top of my head that I really liked in this set that we haven't mentioned. That was Shifting Shadow, which is kind of easy to gloss over.
Yes.
Because it isn't immediately obvious. So it's a 3-mana aura that when you stick on a creature, it gives them haste, and during your upkeep, you have to destroy it, and then you reveal cards from your deck until you get a new creature, and you put that into play and attach this aura to it. So you're sort of like transforming the creature you have into play into the random one on top of your deck every turn. Now, the interesting part about this ability, aside from like the obvious use of like using like enter the battlefield abilities to trigger with free value that way, is that for whatever reason, and maybe it's just because this only works within the rules, is that the aura tells you to destroy the creature, not to sacrifice it. Because of that, this works really well with indestructible creatures. Because if you attach this to, or even regenerating ones, because if you attach this to like a god, right? Mm-hmm. And then upkeep trigger happens, you destroy the god, except it can't be, but there's no if you do on the Shifting Shadow, it just moves over, and you get to keep the card that this was attached to for free. So, like, you put this in, like, a god deck or something, provided that you can get them all to be creatures.
Yes.
You could just keep rolling free creatures out of your deck every turn with this card.
Yeah, I think the main drawback of having a god deck is that if it enters the battlefield as as a creature, but then it's all Nara, it'll just fall off.
It'll break with the
See, you guys are forgetting that we do have Amonkhet gods, and they interplay as creatures.
Right.
They also have the god types, as long as you're not using the ones that Nicol Bolas brought that aren't indestructible. Right. You'll be good. You'll be fine.
And even those just go back to your hand.
Yeah.
So it's in that sense, it's even drawing you cards.
Yeah. There is one card that it does have an infinite combo immediately out of the gate with Enola right now.
Blue enchantment?
No.
I'm thinking with Lotus God, excuse me.
No. So Enola has that eminence ability, pay one, right? So now you put an Ashnod's Altar in the deck. So you can sack whatever to the Ashnod's Altar to generate two colorless mana. So hear me out. You get Bloodline Necromancer, 5-drop, 3/2 with lifelink. Whenever it comes into play, you may return target creature card from grave, as long as it's a vampire or wizard, to battlefield.
So this just makes infinite colorless mana with Ashnod's Altar?
Yep.
Okay, I see.
Makes infinite colorless with Ashnod's Altar. It's a pretty obvious combo, but it's another reason why Ashnod's Altar is going to pick up in value.
I just hate that card. Nobody does anything fair with Ashnod's Altar. Just never want to see that card ever.
Another one
that's not the worst. A 3-card combo that only generates infinite mana colorless, like I could live with that one. That's not the end of the world.
Another really exciting card, I think, is Kindred Discovery. It's a 5-mana. Whenever it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Whenever a creature type you control of that chosen type enters the battlefield or attacks, draw a card.
Yeah, I mean that.
And that is
crazy powerful, right?
Bonker ability.
Yeah, for cards drawn per point of mana, that's a pretty good one, right? I hope I never see this in a Locust God deck, but
I mean, you can't because it's green.
No, it's blue.
No, it is.
Oh wait, Kindred?
It is 5.
Okay, I was thinking Kindred summons for whatever reason.
Yeah, no. I hope I never see it there. But when this card's played fairly and genuinely, this card is just going to get so crazy. Because it triggers on tokens entering play too. It's,
yes.
It's not like a cast trigger. It's
and
just
attacks.
Yeah. So I don't know what to say other than. Wow, like, yeah, it's a lot.
I do want to give another part of the Kindred cycle, like, a shout-out. Not Kindred Summons, which effectively draws you cards, gets you creature cards. It's going to see play in Elves. I might put it in Spiders, might being the keyword. But I actually want to give out Kindred Dominance a shout-out. So, 7-drop sorcery, not the best board wipe, but destroy all non-tribal creatures that you don't want. So, it kind of replaces Ingruk's Wake. It kind of replaces some other stuff. Select stuff.
Oh, do you like that? I don't know, man.
So hear me out. Rather, Damnation destroys regeneration, but if I don't want my stuff to die, it's not a bad thing. It's a kind of another Harsh Mercy, kind of, in the way that Harsh Mercy says everyone on the table gets to choose. This says you just get to choose your tribe.
How much is Plague Wind, though?
It's 9. Huh? Plague Wind is 9, and Ingruk's Wake's 9. This is only 7.
It's sitting at the right mana cost for what it is, but, like, I hate seeing this card. Like, Mass Calcify effects have been around for a while, and, like, I never want to play that card. It's the same thing. If you're just in a black tribe, mono black tribe, you could already be playing, like, Hellfire. That pretty much destroys all non-black creatures, and all your creatures are black, so effectively the same thing for one less mana. This kind of effect is just, like, so expensive for what you're getting.
Another black card that I'm kind of excited about is New Blood, which is 2 black, 2 colorless for sorcery. At additional cost, tap a untapped vampire you control, but gain control of target creature, and change the text of creature type to replace any instance of creature types with vampire. What makes it kind of cool is it opens up, like, control magic into a black build, so it makes it a little bit more, like, viable, like that you have more options available, especially like if you have commanders that like Voltron builds or things that combo off on commanders like Animar. Being able, well, can't do it with Animar because he has pro black, but being able to steal their general or something like that, or their best creature.
That's something. I think more interesting about this card is the fact that it makes the thing a vampire in addition, and any it just replaces all creature types to vampire on that card. So if you steal something like a Hangerback Walker, right? And that Hangerback Walker dies, it's making vampire tokens. So if you have other cards that care about vampires in play, like, you're going to really be able to you know, like use that card profitably.
I think that's where this card really shines to me, is the fact that it replaces all instants of words with whatever it is. So again, going back to vampires, there are other things that can trigger from that. So you can go ahead and steal an Atog-Atog for whatever reason, and now you can sacrifice all vampires rather than the Atogs, and there's significantly more vampires than there are Atogs.
That's right.
Something else that kind of stuck out to me, just as for fun. I've never been a curse fan whatsoever, but I actually really like this curse cycle. Granted, I don't think I'm going to keep them in my decks whatsoever, but this curse cycle is actually kind of fun to me. The fact that the red one gets you mana is fun. The green one untaps all your stuff.
I really like the red one, but with that said, I thought all the other ones were just terrible. Like,
I wasn't a big fan.
Yeah, I thought they were absolute garbage.
So it's just the red and the green one. Just the red and green, which is odd because it's usually the other curses that do something.
Even the green one, like...
The green one untaps all that a person's stuff whenever they attack, so it's...
Yes, but you're giving that ability to your opponents as well, and, like, how do you really intend to use this card? Like,
a 1v1 match?
Huh?
A 1v1 match, that's it.
Okay, sure. If you want to play it 1v1 heads up, you sort of got that at your disposal.
That's all I want to play this thing in, is I just want to play it in a 1v1.
But that card sort of already exists. Was it like Quest for the Gemblades, I think? What was it? There's like a quest in Zendikar or something that did the untapping thing.
You do, but you have to sacrifice it. So it's a one time only.
Is it?
Yeah. I think it is. All the quests were sacrifice them, I think. Except for like Quest of Ula's Temple or something.
I want to double check.
There's the blue quest where you can throw... Like serpents, octopuses, and
Quest of Ula's Temple. Yeah. The red one though, the red one I actually might get because I'm gonna try to play a tribal spider. Are you doing that? Tribal pirate deck, and treasure is just another way for the pirate deck to get a win con, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Another card that I think is also pretty good, not for its combo ability, but just because it seems like a really solid card, is the Bloodsworn Steward. It's a 4 mana for 4/4 with flying creature, and your commander creatures you control get +2/+2 in haste, which I think is a reasonable rate for a creature.
It's not a terrible rate. That guy I really don't like a lot. He's got great flavor. The thing I was talking about before was Quest for Renewal, which is the 2-mana enchantment quest, which is whenever a creature you control becomes tapped, you get a quest counter. And if there are 4 or more quest counters, you get to untap all your creatures during each other on player's untap step. Not quite the same card as this curse, because the curse untaps any non-land permanent. This only does creatures, and you have to get, like, 4 creatures tapped before this works, but still.
So it's kind of like that artifact we were discussing before that just untaps all your stuff for 2 rather than for 5. The legendary artifact that I think should be banned.
Paradox Engine?
Thank you. I don't know why I keep forgetting that name today, but Paradox Engine. I mean, there's that. It's kind of like a Paradox Engine enchantment, which is not bad. Only problem is it does work for all your opponents. But if you do a two-headed giant with this as well, it actually can be abused quite well, I think.
I think there's abuse potential for that card. Yeah. I do.
Another card I think can be abused rather well is Patron of the Vein. 6-drop, 4/4 flying. Whenever it comes into play, destroy a target creature. Whenever creature is destroyed, exile, and all your creatures get +1/+1.
Yeah, I mean, it seems a little bit better to me than Overseer of the Damned, which is sort of like the 7-mana equivalent, that demon that destroys the creature when it comes into play makes 2/2s.
It is specific that it only vampires get the +1/+1, so it is a vampire lord. And it is a vampire-specific card, but I think it's worth looking at.
Well, it's got that Planar Void attached to it, right? So
yeah.
When other people's creatures get killed, they get exiled. So that's valuable. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Or
I think that Kindred Charge is kind of an interesting card.
It is.
You know, just making a token of each one of your creatures.
Double ETB effects and then combat for a ton of guys. It sort of doubles the power that you have on the board.
Yeah.
I feel like this effect has already been made, but I don't know what it is. Like,
it definitely has.
It's blue, in practice, not necessarily in, like, definition by definition, but, like, effectively, the card that gives you this ability is sort of made.
Yeah, I believe there's a blue mana 8, which makes a copy of each one of your.
Well, Clone Legion does opponents, but not yours.
I don't know if you guys are like YouTube-aholics, kind of like I am, but looking at this curse, the guy in the curse looks like one of the guys from Good Mythical Morning.
He's so weird, isn't he?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know. It's such a goofy character. I didn't expect him to be in the
Like he's going to be like some sort of legend in the future, just like some sort of random pirate that has all the bad luck. He's going to be Jack Sparrow or some shit.
Do you think so? I hope I don't see him again. But I would have much rather seen like Norn the Wary, or, like those cards or something. But
yeah.
The only other thing I think I didn't touch upon was the new land that got printed in the set, which I think is bananas. It's almost practically an auto include, I think, for every tribal deck and or 4 and 5 color decks, let alone some other decks. It's just such a good land that you'd play it in almost anything. So.
Yeah.
No, with that said, I don't think there is anything else.
All right, Bill, do you have any final words?
I think this is probably going to be one of the most popular, like, commander sets in recent time. The reason being is that people tend to love playing tribal decks. I think they have like a connection for it, and this offers some creature types that people maybe wanted to play with but haven't had the opportunity to. And I think that's going to excite a lot of people, especially the cat one. I can see that being like hugely popular because people like playing with cats.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit of a disappointment for me because always thought cats are a lame tribe. Like, there isn't anything that, like, makes you want to play a whole bunch of cats together for the most part. They're just, like, cards that people just like playing independently and just put them all together in one deck to the point where now it's a tribe, right? But it just wasn't for me.
Hey, I would have preferred, you know, spiders take the place of that. Just give me a 3-color spider so I could play Dragon Lair Spider, please, for the love of God. That's just my opinion. So, hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Do you guys have anywhere, if anyone likes to follow you on Twitter or something like that, Instagram, the forums, anywhere they can catch you guys at?
I mean, I peruse MTG Salvation in the commander sections. I'm one of the EDH, I'm one of the EDH, trolls, I suppose is a better word to use here. I peruse those forums pretty much exclusively. So, Arrogant Axolotl, if you ever see that name running around, that's me.
Okay. Bill? All right.
I don't really use social media.
So, you can follow me at Twitter at MTG Eternities, or you can find me on YouTube by the same name.
Just remember, all lines of thought are open for all magic seekers. This is your host from MTG Eternities, signing out.